sun. Life has only just begun. We wed this land and pledged our souls to meet its end. Life has only just begun. Hear my people roam the earth, in the kingdom of our birth, where the dust of all our horses hides the sun.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 26, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern until midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and the access code is 449-389-pound. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week on our Bible reading. Let me see, we're in the book of Mark, I believe. All right, Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, verses 23 through chapter 3, verse 6. And it came to pass that he, Jesus, went through the cornfields on the Sabbath day, and his disciples began, as they went, to pluck the ears of corn. And the Pharisees said unto him, Behold, why do they on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? And he, Jesus, said unto them, Have ye never read what David did when he had need and was hungered, he and they that were with him? How he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar and the high priest, and did eat the showbread, which is not lawful to eat, but for the priest, and gave also to them which were with him. And he said unto them, The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. And he, Jesus, entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man there with a withered hand. And they watched him whether he would heal him or on the Sabbath day, that they might accuse him. And he said unto the man which had the withered hand, Stand forth. And he said unto him, Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath day, or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they held their peace. And when he had looked around about on them with anger, being grieved for the hardness of their hearts, he said unto the man, Stretch forth thine hand. And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored whole as the other. And the Pharisees went forth and straightway took counsel that the Herodians against him, how they might destroy him. Okay, that was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, verses 23 through chapter 3, verse 6. All right, again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. Tonight's topic, we're going to continue to pick up where we left off last week. We've been reading the extraordinary action against the judiciary in both houses of Congress. And we read part one 2 weeks ago, and part two we read last week, and this is part three. This focuses in very specifically on our decision and order in the court. We have mailed out all of the papers to all 94 federal district courts, the United States Supreme Court, the appellate court, Court of Appeal. I think they call it the appellate court on the federal level. So there's 13 appellate courts, I believe. We've also sent a copy, we served on to the governors, all 50 governors. I don't know, am I missing anyone, Jan? I think that's pretty much it. You know, of course, we copied the President of the United States. We also sent a copy to AG Barr. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else. We do have some other things. We've been sending it to different organizations also, and we'll be getting it through. We're going to really do a news release probably this week. We'll go out to maybe a couple of thousand news medias across the United States. Just real quick before we get started, there are two papers we're going to be writing soon, and we're hoping that the people who sent out the papers for us, some people sent out one, some people sent out more than one, some people sent out quite a few. And our last mailing cost us $7.35 per mailing, which isn't bad. But these other papers that we want to file, they're probably going to be in something that would fit inside of a regular envelope, and at most two stamps, I believe. So maybe the people who have sent the last ones out, maybe they can also send these out also. So it'll be about, I don't know what the mail's going for these days. I think it's up to 49 cents or something like that. So it should be under a dollar for each mailing, so that shouldn't be too bad. Whatever we can't get mailed out, I guess we could mail it out. It's not too expensive that we can't afford it through National Liberty Alliance, through the donations we get. But again, we'd like to get as much help as we can. Anybody else that wants to also volunteer to do some mailing for the grand jury, just get a hold of Jan. You can reach him at jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. You can also find his information on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. And under the directory, Jan should be up towards the top. He's our national leader. So again, anybody would like to participate with that, we are mailing individual papers also, you know, well, I wouldn't say individual papers, but we're mailing the extraordinary action to individuals, specific people, particularly people who maybe have some radio programs or YouTube programs that run on a regular basis, and we do want to get this out to everyone and anyone. We suggest that anybody who wants to do this, they should send it out to their local sheriffs, maybe a copy, or to anyone else in their local area. We've already sent it to the governor, to all 50 governors, so there's no need to send it to those to the governors. But it would be nice to send copies out to the sheriff. The two papers that I haven't written them yet, but we're thinking about putting it together. I just fell upon something, a message that someone had sent me about the merging of law and equity back in 1939. A lot of things took place in this country back in 1939. There was a big socialist movement right out of New York City, as a matter of fact. There was a big event trying to move this nation back into, you know, over into socialism. Also, in 1939, I believe, was the time when they put out the rules for the federal courts, and that is when it seems that they've merged them. I haven't had the time to read the paper yet. It's about 19 pages from a couple of different places. Let me see who I got it from. One is a law review from St. John, and the other one is North Carolina Law Review. School of Law. And so again, I haven't read it yet, but it when I think about this, as I have read through the rules of the court, I kind of see the possibility of them doing something like this. There's also some statutes that they had placed in there, and I did get some information on that. I'm going to review that too. So again, I do want to add this to the case. This makes it clear on how and why they did conceal natural law courts throughout the whole United States. But it's not just on the federal level, it's also on the state level and the county levels. You know, county courts and state courts are supposed to be courts of law, which is courts of natural law. And of course, all federal district courts, they're supposed to also be a court of record. It's very clear the Constitution refers to courts of law, and there is legislation responding to that, making every federal district court a court of record, and we have 94 federal district courts. Now, courts of record, of course, is courts of law, but they also are equity courts, and of course, equity has its purpose, but they have tried to merge their equity, well, it appears that's what they did, is they merged the equity to our law courts, and therefore, natural law court is no longer available. Of course, we've been working on this for quite a few years, and we did open up a common law court, whether they like it or not. We did go to trial. We've been on trial for a little over 2 years. We started filing our papers a little over 2 years. We started serving them about 3 or 4 years ago. and the big movement by We the People to bring back justice into our courts and bring back the law, ultimately. We started working on this back in early 2000, and you know, we've talked about that, I think, a little bit in the past. It definitely, we talked about it inside of our paperwork of all the times that the people came to the government requesting, not requesting, but asking and demanding for redress of grievances. They've refused. They've met every paper we've sent them with silence. They acquiesced on over 100 and some odd papers over the past 2 years, and actually they acquiesced over a couple of hundred papers over the past 3 years. This paper that we've written is an extraordinary writ. It's a declaration, not too much unlike the Declaration of Independence and also the Magna Carta. You know, we the people have the power and the authority to change governments, and not necessarily change the government itself, of course, but get rid of the bad representatives in government that are not adhering to the Constitution. They took an oath. They swore, uphold, and support the Constitution for the United States of America, and they have failed. So we're in the process through as many indictments as necessary, and if we have to, we will indict the United States Supreme Court. They know what's going on, clearly. We've reported problems within our government by enemies, both foreign and domestic. Been doing that for 3 years and more. And again, they've met us only with silence. So we're going to pick up with a third part of this paper. This will be the final part. And again, this is the decision and order by the grand jury, who is also the trial jury. And the trial ultimately is over. Now, there's another case we started, I think it was last year. We did a case here in New York, and they threw us out the same way they always do. Under Rule 12, we appealed it to a panel of judges, and they've ignored. They ignored it for quite some time, but they did finally come up not too long ago with a decision, and they decided that we don't have enough information or whatever it is that they're saying in Rule 12 that they're going to throw the case out. So we're going to revive that case, and we're going to bring it into the case that we have here against the judiciary. It also becomes a part of evidence, that particular case. So we will be working on that. I don't know how many pages that'll be. I think a regular envelope holds about 12 or 14 pages. I remember I counted it one time quite some time ago. And that takes about two stamps. So that one might be a little long, so it might take two stamps in the envelope. But we're going to move that case into our case and serve a paper onto the Supreme Court, not only as evidence, but also we want to revive the case, and we want the governor of New York and also the legislators of New York to answer. The other case, which we were just talking about, or the other the point we want to make is the fact that they have merged law and equity. And again, I'm going to read through that. And I don't think that that's going to be too long. It'll probably be about five or six pages maybe, but I could be wrong with that. We might want to include a copy of some of these law reports, maybe one or the other. But we can print them double side on that. But I'll have to think about that. But we would like to get it out to all of the judiciary, all of the governors, and of course the appellate level, so we will serve directly ourselves, probably the appellate level, the United States Supreme Court, both houses, get a copy to President Trump, copy to also AG Barr, and then we would hopefully get as many people as we can to assist us in printing these papers out and getting them out to the other 94 federal district courts and some others. So tonight we're going to get back. We're going to get into the final part of our case. I know there was another thing I wanted to bring up before we started reading. Well, whatever it is, we'll cover it after the reading of this, and then we'll go into an open forum. So, see. All right, Gospel of Mark. Then at law, a return to the law and decision in order, part 3. Decision in order by the authority vested in we the people by God. The following decision in order by this tribunal, also known as We the Sovereign People of the United States of America, more than 7,600 people assembled from every state of the Union and counting, was based upon 184 documents filed by the people listed herein, titled List of Documents, and docketed under statutory case number 116CV1490 and law case number that we assigned 1776-1789-1791-2019. Said documents can also be retrieved at nationallibertyalliance.org/action-against-judiciary. The record shows that no defendant or respondent made any return. No defendant or respondent requested more time to answer. And no defendant or respondent provided any objection to the proceedings. We find the facts in this case to be overwhelmingly self-evident. We find their silence and thereby acquiescence to be fraud. As in any case not stifled by legalese, the spirit of truth will always prevail as it purges the darkness to be judged in the light. We the tribunal, also known as the King's Bench, herein we the people, find that silence can only be equated with fraud when there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading, and that it is the duty of the courts to be watchful for the constitutional rights of the citizens and against any stealthy encroachments thereon. It may be that it is an obnoxious thing in its mildest form, but illegitimate and unconstitutional practices get their first footings in that way, namely by silent approaches and slight deviations from legal modes of procedure. This can only be obviated by adhering to the rule that constitutional provisions for the security of the persons and properties should be liberally construed. A close and literal construction deprives them of half their efficacy and leads to gradual depreciation of the right, as if it consisted more in sound than in substance. It is the duty of the courts to be watchful for the constitutional rights of the citizens and against any stealthy encroachment thereon. Their motto should be Obsta Principis. In January 2004, we the people invited all three branches of government to a conference to restore constitutional order held in Washington, D.C. and covered by C-SPAN. The government at the last minute declined to attend, so we went forward without them and sent them a video documentary. The record shows that no respondents made any return, no respondents provided any objections. A copy can be viewed at nationallibertyalliance.org/road-continental-congress-2009. On November 11, 2009, People of America gathered in St. Charles, Illinois, as elected delegates from each of 48 states to discuss the federal government's constitutional violations and their refusal to be held accountable. The conclusion of the people's effort is a 63-page document called Articles of Freedom. The record shows that no respondents made any return and no respondents provided any objections. Delegates to the Continental Congress 2009 and others from each of the several states in the spring of 2010 ceremonially served this document titled Articles of Freedom with its remedial instructions on each United States Senator and Representative in their offices located in their respective states and on each governor and state legislators of both houses, placing them on notice that we the free people of America, believe them to be in violation of their oath of office and the Constitution for the United States of America, and thereby demand obedience to the law. The record shows that no respondents made any return, and no respondent provided any objection. On May 20, 2015, through September 26, 2016, the grand jury, in spirit of Magna Carta and Declaration of Independence, as the sureties of the peace on behalf of the people, served a writ quo warranto, 9 writ mandamuses, 4 informations, 1 declaration, and 1 show cause upon the federal government and 50 state governments, sheriffs, state legislators, and state judiciaries. The record shows that no respondents made any return and no respondents provided any objections. On December 14, 2016, the Common Law Grand Jury, on behalf of the people, opened the Natural Law Court, whereas the court clerk required $400 from the grand jury to open a court of law. The people paid under protest. The grand jury stated that the extraordinary action is a natural law procedure at law, not unlike the unanimous declaration of the 13 colonies of America, whereas 43 more writs, show causes, declarations, redress of grievances, letters, informations, 10 evidence documents, 56 challenges of nonjudicial foreclosures ignored as evidence, and 26 habeas corpuses ignored as evidence, were served upon the respondents and defendants named above, who have all failed to plea and defend. This extraordinary natural law document, writ mandamus, demands that all elected, appointed, and employed bureaucrats cease all unauthorized activities, acknowledge and obey the law of the land, or resign your position. If defendants or respondents continue on their unlawful activities, the grand jury will answer with indictments. And if any clerk or judge mutilates, conceals, carries away, or denies the filing of these documents, the grand jury will answer with indictments under 18 U.S.C. Code subsection 1001 and 18 U.S.C. subsection 2071. The people charge all the resisting respondents and defendants with contempt for their refusal to guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and protect each of them against invasion. Natural law courts are not to be defeated by statutes or equity rules. The judiciary is to take judicial notice that fraudulent court procedures have concealed the people's right of natural law courts, which is an act of treason and fraud upon the court via the judicial machinery. Be advised that this court of record proceeds according to the natural law and not equity. See Memorandum of Law and Equity, where the tribunal is the people themselves, untainted, whereas elected and appointed judges decide in equity courts only. Any attempt to interfere via summary judgments will be met with indictments. Any attempt to conceal, remove, mutilate, or destroy would also be met with indictments. Rights are unalienable. Legislators cannot legislate rights away, no matter what the bar outcome-based educated lawyers have instructed. Rights are unalienable, meaning not transferable, because they are bequeathed upon us by God and not man. Not even the people can give them up for themselves or others. Once the people ordained common law as the law of the land, no man can abrogate it, because the Declaration of Independence was a covenant with God that only he can revoke, and thereby any attempt by the federal judiciary and Congress to abrogate it is an act of war against the people and their God. The covenant made between God and his people in 1776 empowered we the people to self-government. George Washington said the United States was built upon the fundamental maxims of true liberty, and that the basis of our political system is the right of the people to make and to alter their constitutions of government. But the Constitution, which at any time exists, till changed by an explicit and authentic act of the whole people, is sacredly obligatory upon all. The very idea of the power and of the right of the people to establish government presupposes the duty of every individual to obey the established government. Sovereign people have an unalienable right of authority. By God were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible. Whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. And he is before all things, and by him all things consist. And through his natural law, we the people are vested with unalienable rights. Governments are not. Our government servants' power and authority is defined in the Constitution that we the people ordained and established. Natural law is written by God in the hearts of men. It is a process of maxims and common sense, and it is very easy to grasp by the common person because truth is self-evident. Defendants and respondents, being elected or appointed government servants, ought to be cognizant that the first documented grand jury in 1215 A.D. was self-appointed. We, the people, have been entrusted to dispense justice through juries formed by the people ourselves. This natural law court of record of we, the sovereign people, being the highest court of the land, needs no permission to assemble ourselves and adjudicate. Does the master seek leave from his servants? And the judges of the United States Supreme Court, with clipped sovereignty, being creatures of the law that we ordained, and thereby vested with authority under the chains of the Constitution, have a duty to speak and acknowledge the law of the land on the record. Let us remind our servants that the first known documented grand jury was formed by the people themselves to put the tyrant king back under the control of the law via Magna Carta, which was written by the people who wrote their intentions and commands down on that historical document where they declared, if anyone has been disposed without the legal judgment of his peers from his lands, homes, franchises, or from his rights, we will immediately restore them to him. And if a dispute rises over this, then it will be decided by the 25 jurors, of whom mentioned is made below in the clause for securing the peace. Moreover, for all those possessions from which anyone has, without the lawful judgment of his peers, been deceased or removed by our government, we will immediately grant full justice therein. Magna Carta, paragraph 52. And this is what we intend to do. We have many attached cases via joinder and many more to follow. Whereas in any case where we find that due process was denied and the defendants were carried away to jurisdictions unknown, we will nullify and immediately restore them via summary judgments. As to the construction, with reference to the common law, an important canon of construction is that constitutions must be construed to reference to the common law. The common law so permitted destruction of the abatement of nuisances by summary precedents, and it was never supposed that a constitutional provision was intended to interfere with this established principle. And although there is no common law of the United States in the sense of a national customary law as distinguished from the common law of England, adopted in the several states, in interpreting the federal constitution, recourse may still be had to the aid of the common law of England. It has been said that without the reference to the common law, the language of the federal constitution could not be understood. 16 American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, section 114. When the federal judiciary hears cases under civil and criminal jurisdictions, it is a de facto court, whereas the officers who conspired under the color of law, acting as a nisi prius de facto quasi-court, not of record, proceeding in equity and not in law, and willfully injures, oppresses, defrauds, and deprives the people of their unalienable right of due process, secured by the Bill of Rights, with the intent to proceed unlawfully to carry plaintiffs away to jurisdictions unknown. Such courts are inferior courts, whose jurisdiction is limited and special, and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. Criminal courts proceed according to statutory law. Jurisdictions and procedure is defined by statute. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It is an inferior court. Therefore, when a judge interferes in a natural law court to seize control of the tribunal via summary judgment in an attempt to quash justice, he or she is guilty of obstruction of the court orders under 18 U.S.C. subsection 1509. Today, by this extraordinary mandamus, we order that defendants either repent and obey the law of the land or resign your position immediately. Failure to act will result in the wrath of we the people via indictments. We the people demand an end to this tyranny and remind the respondents that the decisions of the superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeal. The decisions of an inferior court are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in the superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resort to appeal to an appellate court. Decisions of a court of record may not be appealed. It is binding on all other courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be appellate or Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgments of this court of record. The judgments of this court of record, whose jurisdiction is final, is as conclusive on all the world as the judgments of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as on other courts. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. Federal judiciary, federal trial courts jurisdictions are equity courts proceeding under the rules of equity, and whose jurisdiction is fined under USC title, which proceeds with one appointed a jurist, a judge, when opened under one of the USC titles, whose decision can be appealed. All courts operating under USC titles 1 through 57 are inferior court, whose jurisdictions are limited and special and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. Criminal courts are courts under USC 18, whose jurisdiction and procedure is defined by statute. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to the statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of law, which only proceeds according to natural law. It is an inferior court. Law courts, also known as courts of record or natural law courts, proceed according to the rules of the common law, where the judge is not the tribunal, but the magistrate who administrates the will of the petit jury, see Memorandum Petit Jury Authority, whose decisions are final and cannot be appealed. Even in criminal cases driven by statutes under USC titles that we the people authorize, the petit jury continues with their sovereign power of nullification of any statute that they find inappropriate or repugnant to the facts of the case, and where mercy can prevail. We the people have sovereign immunity. Samuel Adams said, "The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will of legislative authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule. Laws are made for us. We are not made for the laws. Under our system of government, upon the individuality and intelligence of the citizens, the state does not claim to control him except as his conduct to others, leaving him the sole judge as to all that affects him." Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to the law, for it is the author and the source of law. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king, his majesty, God, in the eye of the law, is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges, the people, are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. We the people did not authorize Congress to legislate law for the federal courts to prosecute people who are not a bureaucrat or not participating in interstate commercial activities, but only under the following four instances: counterfeiting, piracies on the high sea, laws of nations, and treason. Federal prosecutors have no authority to seek an indictment against one of the people unless they are employed by the federal government and thereby fall under a controlling U.S. code, are engaged in commercial activity between the states, or are engaged in unlawful commercial activity between states, such as human trafficking, drug trafficking, sex trafficking, trafficking counterfeit goods or services, advocating the overthrow of the government, identity theft, hijacking, racketeering, antitrust, assassination, bankruptcy, fraud, embezzlement, child exploitation, child pornography, computer crimes, conspiracy, copyright matters, counterfeiting, counterintelligence crimes, cyber crimes, border protection, and the removal of illegal aliens, etc. USC jurisdictions. United States Code Title 1 through 57 provides subject matter jurisdiction and personam jurisdiction in courts of equity for bureaucrats, namely elected, appointed, and or hired public servants, and for maritime and interstate commercial activities. These authorities can be found under Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 3, 4, 6, 8, 10, 15, 17, and 18. And like foreign diplomats, we the people have sovereign immunity from all legislative laws. Said titles do not provide any personam jurisdiction of the people, nor can it be because it be repugnant to the law, also known as natural law. Therefore, federal prosecutors have no authority to seek an indictment against a person for possessing a weapon or a so-called controlled substance, even if said person crosses state lines. USC Title 18 is not the law of the land. Title 18 is maritime and territorial jurisdiction. See Memorandum USC Title 18. And cannot be applied to the people unless, as we stated above, they are a bureaucrat or involved in interstate commercial activities. Any attempt to try the people or of legislative crimes is fraud and high treason. USC Title 26 is not the law of the land and cannot be applied upon the people. The Constitution clearly states in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4, that no direct tax shall be laid. In the United States Supreme Court case Pollock v. Farmers Loan and Trust Company, 1898, the court defined a direct tax as a tax on personal income. A tax upon one's whole income is a tax upon the annual receipts from his whole property, and as such falls within the same class as a tax upon that property, and this is a direct tax in the meaning of the Constitution. The following are a few U.S. Supreme Court decisions that make clear that USC Title 26 does not apply to personal income. In Birchbarber v. Union Pacific Railroad, the 16th Amendment does nothing except move the income tax out of the indirect classification of duties imposed on foreign imports and into an indirect classification of exercises imposed on privileges and commodities. Again, Birchberger v. Union Pacific. Since the income tax is without apportionment by virtue of the wording of the 16th Amendment, it cannot be a direct tax, because direct tax must still be apportioned. So the income tax is still an indirect tax. Income has been taken to mean the same thing as used in the Corporation Exercise Tax of 1999. The worker does not receive a profit or gain from his or her labor, merely an equal exchange of funds for services. By the previous ruling, this is a case of Stratton versus Baltic Mining. By the previous ruling, it was settled that the provisions of the 16th Amendment conferred no new power of taxation, but simply forbidden the previous complete and plenary power of income taxation posed by Congress from the beginning from being taken out of the category of indirect taxation to which it inherently belonged. Evans v. Macomba. Congress cannot, by any definition of income in this case, it may adopt, conclude the matter, since it cannot, by legislation, alter the Constitution from which alone it derives its power to legislate, and within whose limitations alone that power can be lawfully expressed. United States v. Clamara. In construing federal revenue statute, Supreme Court gives no weight to Treasury regulations which attempt to add to statutes something which is not there. Evans v. Gore. The 16th Amendment does not justify the taxation of persons or things previously immune. It was intended only to remove all occasion for any apportionment of income tax among the states. It does not authorize a tax on salary. Plan to return to Republican principles. Madison to the people of the state of New York. According to the provisions of most of the constitutions, again, as well as according to most respectable and received opinions on the subject, the members of the Judiciary Department are to retain their office by the firm tenure of good behavior. Judges are creatures of the law and are bound to obey it. If judges break the law, they can be removed for bad behavior, prosecuted, and sued for damages. They are duty-bound to obey the law. If judges fail to defend the Constitution when it is brought before them, they war against it and must be removed. The United States Supreme Court confirmed in the case of Marbury v. Madison that unconstitutional legislation null and void. And in Cohen v. Virginia said, decency, security, and liberty alike demands that government officials be subject to the same rules of conduct that are commands to the citizens. In a government of laws, existence of the government will be imperiled if it fails to observe the law scrupulously. Crime is contagious. If government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for the law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. And against that pernicious doctrine, this court should resolutely set its face. Judges have no more right to decline an exercise of jurisdiction which is given than to usurp that which is not given. The one or the other would be treason to the Constitution. No judicial process, whatever form it may assume, can have any lawful authority outside of the limits of the jurisdiction of the court or judge by whom it is issued, and an attempt to enforce it beyond these boundaries is nothing less than lawless violence. When a judge knows that he lacks jurisdiction or acts in the face of clearly valid statutes expressly depriving him of jurisdiction, judicial immunity is lost. A judge must be acting within the jurisdiction as to subject matter and person to be entitled to immunity from civil action for his act. When a judicial officer acts entirely without jurisdiction or without compliance with jurisdiction requisites, he may be held civilly liable for abuse of process even though his act involved a decision made in good faith when he had jurisdiction. We the people vested the United States Supreme Court as final arbiter over all inferior federal courts in Article 3, Section 1. The judicial power of the United States shall be invested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges both of the Supreme Inferior Court shall hold their offices during good behavior. And since Congress has neither the backbone nor the will to do their duty, and if the United States Supreme Court does not perform an extraordinary act necessary to secure our union, then we the people most certainly will. Wherefore, for the reasons stated herein, it is hereby ordered that the United States Supreme Court is to take action and to secure the Republic on behalf of the people by removing judges and bad behavior. Any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution of the United States wars against the Constitution and engages in acts of violence of the supreme law of the land. The judge engages in acts of treason. We have reported subversion against the people from within. The federal judiciary indictments are imminent. An immediate decree via writ mandamus to all federal district court judges and magistrates that, number one, they are to return the decorum of the court. the U.S. Supreme Court has a duty to secure the people's court by commanding judges not to trespass or hijack courts of record. 2. Federal district courts are to obey the law of the land. 3. Federal district courts are to acknowledge natural law courts. 4. Federal district courts are to hear habeas corpus cases within 3 days and dispose of the case justly. 5. Federal district courts are to cease all prosecutions of people under USC Title 18 that are not bureaucrats or not involved in interstate commerce activities. 6. Federal district courts are to cease all prosecutions of people under USC Title 26 for income tax or failing to file. 7. Federal district courts are to provide a form to file a natural law court case for cause. 8. Federal district courts are not to charge statutory fees in a non-statutory case, courts of record, for justice. 9. Federal district courts are to give judicial notice to all district courts that courts of record are natural law courts and therefore the rules of Title 28 do not apply. USC Title 26 is not positive law. With the exception of destruction of abatement of nuisance by summary proceedings so permitted under 16 American Jurisprudence, Second Edition, Section 114, summary judgments are not permitted in courts of record. Any judge who tries to prevent the right of the people to petition the government for a redress of grievance under Amendment 1 commits a crime under USC Title 18. And if a federal prosecutor would like a grand jury impaneled, they are to call them forth through the administrations entrusted by the people of the county that is a lawful, impaneled, and an impartial, untainted, informed grand jury. And if an indictment is procured, the said administration shall impanel an impartial, untainted, informed petit jury. Jury tamping and stacking. See memorandum for jury tamping and stacking. We the people have the unalienable right to consent or not to consent as to the government's accusations against the people. The handbook for federal grand jurors and trial jurors are subversive and are 100% proof of jury tampering in every single federal court, and thereby shows we need the need for free and independent grand and petit jury administrators. All officers of the courts, judges, prosecutors, appointed counsel, attorneys, sheriffs, marshals, and clerks, law enforcement agencies, U.S. marshals, and legislators of statutes are employed by the government and or are members of the bar, which teach their members to be anti-constitutional and anti-common law, and thereby subversive by simply maintaining their ignorance to the Constitution and the common law, as they are trained to place the letter of the law above the essence of common law, that being justice and mercy. Allowing our servants to control the jury has bred absolute government corruption and control. Therefore, it is an unalienable right of we the people to provide for the administration of our grand and petit juries ourselves within our counties. 11. Amendment 10. The assumption of sovereign power and the institution of government by consent are acts of supreme authority, which the people alone are competent to perform. And accordingly, it is in the name of and by the authority of the people that the judiciary was vested. Whereas the United States Supreme Court and the federal district courts have seized power not delegated to them in violation of the 10th Amendment. A case in point. The people ought to decide through courts of justice and not judges via courts of equity the abortion issue, which is a natural law and not a positive or human law issue that was unconstitutionally adjudicated by the United States Supreme Court, which is an equity court governed by codes and statutes. This brings the issue into the proper jurisdiction, a natural law court of record, adjudicated by the King's Bench, which is the jury, we the people, consisting of 12 people core to mirror the will of nature's God, answering to him alone. The United States Supreme Court does not have the authority to act like God's adversary, that they can change God's law. Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbidden by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. The United States Supreme Court and its federal judiciary is in bad behavior. They have unlawfully treaded upon the rights of the people and the states to govern themselves, and most alarmingly, they think that they can change the laws of God. Therefore, the United States Supreme Court and its inferior court are to immediately cease their lawless jurisdictional advances designed to spread their socialist agenda. Stop encroaching upon the people's unalienable right protected by the 10th Amendment, and stop legislating from the bench or suffer the consequences of indictments for subversion, conspiracy, and treason. To Congress, the Declaration of Independence was a covenant between the people and their God, placing themselves under his law, and thereby we received the blessing of liberty. Upon this foundation, the Constitution was framed, and its Bill of Rights became its crown by which all legislation is tried. While the Constitution can be amended as per Article 5, the balance of power between the three branches of federal government, the sovereign states and the sovereign people, cannot be altered in any way that would affect that balance. This was Jefferson's freedom formula founded in the Bible, which prevents the misconstruction or abuse of government powers. Its self-evident truth and genius was immediately recognized and embraced by our founding fathers. It is our American heritage, and any attempt to alter that balance is an act of war. The biblical formula vested the people paramount, and any legislation that is repugnant to our unalienable rights is repugnant to the law of the land, and thereby null and void. We were clear that Congress shall make no law that will infringe upon our heritage, and via Article 6, we required that all elected and appointed bureaucrats be bound by oath or affirmation to support the Constitution. Congress, in response, wrote the required oath of office to be taken in Title 5, U.S.C., subsection 3331. This oath necessitates that elected or appointed oath takers are to support and defend the Constitution. And if their personal views are too strong as to prevent them from upholding that oath, they would not be worthy to be our stewards, because their oath would be a lie. People have freedom of speech, and thereby have a right to express any view, including atheism, communism, socialism, Nazism, etc., as long as they do no harm. They also have the unalienable right to remain silent when questioned by the government or anyone. But elected and appointed servants, when faithfully discharging the duties of their office, have no right to be silent, but to the contrary, have a duty to speak, for to be silent would be fraud. They also do not have the right to express a view that does not support and defend the Constitution while they are faithfully discharging the duties of their office. Therefore, while faithfully discharging the duties of their office, if they campaign and champion to advocate any position that would abrogate a natural right, such as the right to bear arms, it would be a violation of their oath, an act of war against the Constitution, placing them in bad behavior, and the only proper remedy is removal from office. And if Congress does not have the backbone or remedy to remedy by impeachment via Article 2, Section 4, and Article 1, Section 3, Clause 7 for bad behavior, then we the people will via indictments. Ordered that the United States Congress, both House and Senate, is, number 1, to impeach and remove all judges that are in bad behavior. Any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution of the United States, wars against that Constitution, and engages in acts of violence of the supreme law of the land, that judge is engaged in acts of treason. 2. to show by what constitutional authority they act when they propose legislation. 3. To legislate law that the Constitution and civics ought to be taught to elementary and high school. 4. Congress is to restore the original 13th Amendment. In January 1810, Senator Reed proposed the Title of Nobility Amendment. The Senate voted to pass by a vote of 26-1. The House resolved in the affirmative of 87-3. By December 10, 1812, 12 of the required 13 states ratified in 1819. See Memorandum of Amendment 13. We suggest that Congress combine the latter 13th Amendment with the 14th Amendment. 5. Under 16th American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, section 177, Congress is to repeal the 17th Amendment for the following reasons. Said amendment usurped the state's independence, whereas these United States have been deprived of equal suffrage in the Senate in violation of the Constitution, Article 5, and the balance of power, thereby removing their sovereignty and destroying their republican form of government that the federal government was to protect under Article 6, Section 4, and upset the checks and balances of power between the states and the Federation. The 17th Amendment also robbed the states of their ability to exercise powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor forbidden by it to the states. That was reserved to the states respectively, or to the people, protected by the 10th Amendment, and thereby stealing the state's sovereignty. Furthermore, the 17th Amendment was not ratified, and many unconstitutional acts by Congress and the judiciary would have been prevented if the states were not deprived of their clipped sovereignty by the unconstitutional 17th Amendment. We are a nation of law, and because the 17th Amendment wars against the balance of power, and if an amendment cannot be procured, nullification by Congress is sufficient. The 17th Amendment cannot stand. 6. Congress is to clarify that the 16th Amendment, which attempts to turn the people into indentured servants and subject them to debtors' prison, does not and cannot authorize a direct tax. In other words, an income tax. 7. Congress is to repeal all legislation that subjects the people to government authority. We the people vested the United States Congress with 17 powers to write regulations, codes, and statutes under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. None of the said legislative powers permit legislation of the people's behavior, only the behavior of bureaucrats and commercial activities. Congress has no authority to write a penal code to punish the people or a tax code to enslave the people. The people are not subject to any of the laws of the United States without their permission, and they give their permission when they engage in activities defined under Article 1, Section 8. Congress is to provide law and funds to properly secure our borders. Our servants have exposed we the people to all the dangers of invasion from without and subversion from within. Our servants have obstructed the laws for illegal aliens who are flooding our nation with foreign insurgents, some hostile, destroying our economy, and putting at risk the security of our states. 9. Congress is to make regular, not restrict commerce, with foreign nations and among the several states, and with Indian tribes. 10. Congress is to coin money, and not print paper money not backed by gold or silver. In other words, silver certificates, nor is Congress to pass their vested powers of coining to foreign bankers. 11. Congress is to coin only gold and silver. 12. Congress is not to turn over control of our post offices to foreign control. 13. Congress is to cease taking money from special interest groups for a favorable vote. Congress was sent to Washington to represent the will of the people, not corporations. To sell your vote and soul to the highest bidder is hereinafter a bribe and thereby a felony. 14. Our language is clear in Article 1, Section 3, Clause 4, which states, the Vice President of the United States shall be the President of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they be equally divided, and that there can be no rulemaking that can abrogate our law. Therefore, Senate decisions, unless we said otherwise, need only a majority vote to pass. Obey the law, or we will remove all that resist via indictments. And commanded that all elected, appointed, and hired servants are to obey the law of the land and join the people in our quest to reinstate the Constitution for the United States of America and bring to justice all subverts who resist. And resolved and decided that any resistant, mutilation, or returned documents, filings, will be answered with indictments. It is so ordered. August 14, 2019, Albany, New York. Signature, Grand Jury Foreman, Natural Law Tribunal, and so sealed, Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, under Natural Law. Okay. All right, I remember what I had forgot. I wanted to mention, kind of late for that, but for those who are just joining us and they weren't here for the last two readings, we did have a copy, and we still do, of course, have a copy of that paper on our front page, only a couple inches down. You can find it. Also, you can find all of the papers that we have filed in the courts against the judiciary and all of the past papers, which all became part of one case anyway. But we did open up a we provided a common law number since they didn't give it to us. We gave ourselves one. So we do have two numbers when reference to this case. One is a statutory number, which we use ultimately to store all of our information so that we're under the auspices of the judiciary. Under the auspices means that you're just operating underneath them, but they have no control, no say. They're not to really tell us anything about the way we're to do business. This is the people's court. And this is what the people have forgotten. The people have forgotten their heritage. They have forgotten the most important thing that we, the people, need, is, which was the purpose of the way our country, our nation, was created, was to be free from government tyranny, free from the king. That's why we never gave them permission to write any legislature that controls our behavior. That belongs to us alone. We are not under legislative control. The only law we must be obedient to is the law of the land, which is and the law of God. And well, the law of the land ultimately, you know, umbrellas both the common law and the Constitution, and of course its foundation, the Declaration of Independence, and its capstone, Bill of Rights. But that's the only law we're under. All men are under the law of God, under, you know, the law of natural law, at least in the United States, anyway. Before we get going, let me just take a look, see a few other things we might want to cover. Jan, do we have any announcements?
Yes, I have a couple. First, on the mailings, we mailed out 94 papers to the federal district courts, 13 to the federal appellate courts.
Try to get a little closer to your mic, and you're coming in a little broken up, but try to get a little closer to your mic.
And that was 157 copies we have on our return mail receipts for 85 of those so far. And that's low.
You're coming in really, really bad. We can hardly understand you. Are you connected normally, or are you coming in through a, you know, what kind of a phone, a landline or a cell? Jan? We're not getting you anything at all. Terry, you don't hear Jan, do you? All right, anyway, we'll move on, and hopefully Jan will be able to fix that problem, and we'll move back over to any kind of announcements that he has. Any questions?
He sounded pretty bad to me. I was trying to get to my unmute button. It took me a little while. I don't have the announcements that he's talking about. So if he gives them to me, I'll let you know, and we can do it later.
All right. Maybe he'll try to make a better connection. You know, maybe he's on a cell for some reason or another. Or maybe just disconnect his connection and try back again, get a better connection. Until then, we'll continue on. Let me just see. Jan, you want to try one more time? He looks like he's frozen on the board here. Okay, we're not getting anything. All right, he'll have to reboot or do whatever he can to try to repair that. Again, we are, just for everyone, especially anybody new here, we are joining cases, and all of our cases ultimately, you know, it's all about due process and being carried away to jurisdictions unknown. So if anybody has a case that they want to join with us, we'll go through that process. What we do is we file an amicus curiae, which is a friend of the court on behalf of, in this case, the defendant and anybody in a particular case, and also to challenge mostly their jurisdiction and the fact that they're not giving due process. After that, depending on what happens, they usually won't answer, so we'll just continue and go forward. And then at that point, we will move it to the federal court. If they do answer, well, we'll respond to that and still move it to the federal court because they don't have jurisdiction. Any court operating under statutes do not have jurisdiction over the people. They have been defrauding the people. They have been hiding our common law courts, our courts of natural law. The next thing we do is we give them the opportunity to repair. Well, actually, before we make the move, we give them that opportunity to repair this problem and restore the individual to their original state prior to, their being carried away and so on. If they refuse to do that, then, of course, we then move the case into the federal court under the court papers that we just talked about and just read. It'll be in that case. We'll give them a period of time to show cause by what authority they think they act and so on. And at the end of that, we will make a decision and an order, and then we'll move forward. At some point in time, we don't know how long we're going to go before, we actually get the results that we're looking for. I do believe we've shaken them up quite a bit. We've been shaking them up for a couple of years, but I think this paper has really jarred them quite good. And I say that for a couple of things that I've seen, and I'm not going to comment and talk about, at least not right now, but the way they've acted in the past week or so that I have seen, it seems to me that it's starting to register in them. Also, I know President Trump just recently, this past weekend, had made some mention talking about the people have had it. They're fed up with this whole system, and that people got to get back under the law. I'm paraphrasing. But ultimately, the people want justice. They want justice back in their courts. They want people who are subverting our country, our nation, our courts of record, and our Constitution, and our Bill of Rights. All those people that are subverting that, we want justice. We want them to be tried and a just decision made by the people. Now, again, I'm paraphrasing that, but that in pretty much is what the president had said. So we do have, of course, backing from the president, and we've been copying him for quite a few years now. We also have seen some statements he's made that seems to agree with some of the things we've been saying. So it's either a coincidence or he's reading our papers and putting it out there to agree with us. But nevertheless, he's in agreement with this thinking. If the people don't take back their courts, okay, if they do not take back their courts, you cannot have liberty. You cannot trust your government. You cannot be in a situation where the servant judges the master. That can never be. It's the people to judge the people. That's common law. In a common law court, let me put that a different way, because there are officers that belong in a common law court. Definitely the sheriff or one of his deputies should be in a common law court. And, of course, a magistrate. A magistrate doesn't make any decisions They just really administrate the law and the process. They sign the papers of the will of the jury, whatever that will is. They, you know, make sure it's typed up and expresses the will correctly and properly of the people of that jury, to put a seal on it, put a signature on it, and then pass it out for execution, whatever that might be. And that is the only participation that anybody in an administrator is an administrative process. That's the only participation by the government. All judges, every judge is a magistrate. So a judge wears two caps. If he's in an equity court, he gets to decide. Okay, and there's an appellate process. There's a couple appeal systems, and then of course you can go to the United States Supreme Court, and appeal there. You know, if they'll hear your case. But that's equity. It has nothing to do with law cases. Law cases, when the people make a decision, the jury's decision is final. Just as final as the United States Supreme Court would be on an equity court, so are the people in a court of law. This is our heritage. We, the people, need to take 100% control of our courts. We also, of course, need to become educated in order to do that. And that's why we have that course out online here, Government by Consent. So it's extremely important that we get as many people as possible to take those courses just to be knowledgeable to begin with, knowledgeable in the law of the land, our history, our true heritage, what liberty really is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Understand the difference between equity and law. But of those people that are taking that, we hope that a percentage of those people step up to take control within their own counties. We're setting up administrations across the nation. Four people in every county, a paid position. Right now, judges and prosecutors are paid to do this work. Well, the people need to be paid to do this work, and the people need to orientate the jury. The people need to make sure that we have untainted, unstacked juries. We cannot continue to allow the fox to be in charge of the hen house. We have to take control of this. This is what this is all about. This whole case is to take back control of the judiciary. Once we take back control of the judiciary, we can then have the power and the authority and the ability to take back control of the committeemen, the elected committeemen across this nation, where the people decide who goes onto the ballot, where the people decide whether they're going to put them on the ballot or not, particularly by their knowledge of the Constitution. And if they come before the people to be put, because that's what committeemen do. They work about 40 hours a year. That's about it. Mostly during election time. And they get to interview these people who want to become our elected servants. And we need to first of all, of course, educate the committeemen and understand what their job really is and what the criteria should be for them choosing an individual to be elected to whatever positions they are looking at or talking, and interviewing for. So they get the job, and this should be a great job. Now, this is not a paid position, but it is something that every American at some point in their life should become a committeeman. It's a two-year commitment. Like I said, it's about 40 hours a week, and it's a great job. It pays itself just having that job, because you get the opportunity to quiz these people, to find out who these people are, to ask them questions, quiz them on the Constitution. And if they don't know the Constitution, send them on their way. We send them to National Liberty Alliance, take our course, and then come back and we'll talk to you again. But they need to understand the Constitution. They need to understand the powers and the authorities that we gave them and the limitations of that. We also, in this process of doing what we're doing, through the grand jury particularly, let's talk about, and the trial juries, but particularly the grand jury, the power of indictment, very powerful. And we can get rid of people at some point if they're not obedient to the law of the land. If they're not upholding and supporting the Constitution, we can indict them and thereby remove them from office and try them. Also, the committeemen, which again gets to choose the individual who's going on to the ballot. Right now, it's a top-down process and very, very tightly controlled. And we get to choose the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. Sometimes an individual gets by them. We see Ron Paul and, of course, Donald Trump got by the system, went straight to the people, and were able to get in. But we need to take this process back. And the committeemen have the power and the authority to recall anybody in office at any time. There are certain requirements that have to be followed in order to do that. But it is a simple process. It is something that, if it's popular among the people, that they want to pull back an individual because they're disobedient to the law, all they have to do is walk the petitions, get enough signatures, bring it in, and bring the process over and require a recall and a new election to replace that position. So that's powerful. That's government by consent. If we can control the political process and require them to obey the Constitution from the committeeman through the committeeman, and if we can also do the same thing through the judicial process, require them to be obedient to the Constitution or suffer an indictment, that is true consent of government. That is 100% control of the government. It is that simple. But those are the two power structures that control our government, and the people must take control of that. And if we don't, then we're going to lose our nation again. There is a power void that's going to be, really come through the entire nation. Once the deep state is out, it's up to the people to step up and seize the power. Because if the people don't step up and seize power on the grassroots level, then someone else will, and we'll only find ourselves back in the same situation years down the road. It is the way it is. And if the people expect to be ignorant and free, as Thomas Jefferson has told us, they expect what never was and never will be. So we have to study and learn the things of the law. And it's exciting, as a matter of fact. Anybody who's taken the courses should realize, how exciting these courses are, how we're learning how to have our liberty and to take control of our liberty and to control our government. That's what we need to do. The people need to be mature enough to do that. Our children are taught in schools to be socialist. It's outcome-based education. The end results from grade 1 to 12th grade, for 12 years of school, the end results that they are trying to desire and accomplish, and they've accomplished this. It's pretty large when you look out there to see how many people are supporting socialism. It's alarming and frightening. But that's because they went through this outcome-based education. Same thing with our bar attorneys. These bar attorneys have outcome-based education. They are anti-constitutional, anti-common law, destructive to anything that's good. They have destroyed our courts. They have filled the positions of all of the prosecutors. They've taken positions, of course, of judges, even on the appellate levels, and they've fused together the law court and equity court and made it all one. Nisi Prius Equity de facto courts with no power and no authority. But they are incarcerating people, and they are injuring people. And the only reason they're getting away with it is because the slaves, we the people, are ignorant, and they're keeping us ignorant. We need to step up and take back our heritage and exercise our unalienable rights to control our government and have government by consent and require the law to be applied upon anyone who violates their oath of office at any level of government. And until we the people come to the realization of doing this and get educated, then we don't deserve anything. We deserve what we're getting, as a matter of fact, if we're not willing to take control of this. So again, we have two courses. We have a civics course. That's a free course. About 120 hours, a lot of video and audio, some questions in between. But it's really, really eye-opening. You'll be amazed on how they did this. We cover all this in the civics course. It's a real eye-opener course. So we get to learn and see how these people did what they did and how they structured this, deep state and so on and so forth. Inside there, we also have a course on the Constitution by Michael Bodnarik. Really good. I think it's about 12 or 14 hours of stuff that we have that, he's been teaching, and we put that in there. It's a video to watch, different sections, and then if we ask a few questions, then you go on. So that's the civics course, okay? We get a little bit of the Constitution. We get an understanding of how we got to where we're at, and how they structured the way they structured themselves in order to take over our nation, how they've taken over the news, the media, how they've taken over the educational process, and then the other side of the coin now is government by consent. Again, anybody who takes that course, we do ask for them to be premier members. A premier member is a person who donates $5 a month or more, okay, and they get to take that course. Now, in very rare cases, there are some people maybe on a very tight budget, maybe they're on Social Security, and they just can't afford $5. And believe me, there are people out there that can't afford $5. Not many, but there are some. I know a few, as a matter of fact. And so for those people that really can't afford to give the $5 a month or more, which, by the way, is one cup of coffee and maybe a bagel or a donut or something, a month. Just give up a bagel and a coffee a month, you know, and that's the for liberty, for liberty. But anyway, anybody who can't afford it, get in touch with Jan at NationalLibertyAlliance.org, and he will flip the button for you so you'll have access into the course. You just need to become a member, and he'll make sure you get access. We don't want to deprive anyone of this, this course and this understanding. But of course, we do need money in order to keep the lights on, so to speak, and pay for all of the activities and things that we do. So again, everybody should be taking these courses. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. If we ignore this and we don't take care of this, then we're going to lose our liberty. We'll do it for your posterity. Do it for your friends and neighbor, your spouse. Do it for yourself, for the people, and step up and do it. Anyway, I think that brings me to the end of anything I have to say here on these things. Is Brent here?
Yeah, John, can you hear me now?
We can hear you. Let's try that.
Okay, I have several questions. The first would be, Wells Fargo Bank dragged me into court for a credit card dispute via a third-party debt collector. The court issued a summary judgment in favor of Wells Fargo Bank without a signed valid affidavit. Now, I'm ready to file my jurisdictional challenge, but I need to know if I need to file a motion to vacate the void summary judgment before.
They just have to get a hold of Jim, intake at nationallibertyalliance.org, send an email to him, make sure you give him your name, phone number, and basically a little bit of information that you don't have to write much, a sentence or two. Jim will make contact with you, and he'll work you through the process step by step to move your case on under ours. Remember, all of these, if they really want to come out to get us, if they think that they have a case, take it into a court of law. It's that simple. If you can't take it into a court of law and you got to go into an equity court that has no power, no authority over the people, then we will shut it down. And that's what we're going to do to all these cases. And there is one other point, and I haven't worked this out. I think I mentioned this last week. I haven't worked out some kind of a formula. If these courts do not do the right thing before we bring them into and enjoin their case into our case here, what they'll have to do is to cease and desist that court and restore the individual to their original state, which means whatever money they put out, maybe paid for a lawyer, any kind of a cost factor. If it's a court CPS case and things of that, they must give back their children. Okay, and if you really think there's a problem there, if they really think that they have a case, then take it into a court of law and let the people decide, because that's our job, not the government. The government cannot rule over the master, but the servant has taken over the house, and we, the people, need to take it back. What else you got, Jan? You've been muted. Let me unmute you. Go ahead, Jan.
Okay. When National Liberty Alliance had indicted a public official, how do you get the indictment enforced?
Well, again, it's up to the people. If the people get behind it, we have a little over 7,600 people behind it, but we need all those 7,600 people to really start to get active behind us. You know, we're out on the radios. We're sending out to the news. We put a stake in the heart of these vampires by this last paper. We've put them on call. You know, this is it. And it's a matter of pressure. We know in the beginning they're not going to do much. We know maybe some things will happen, but we haven't gotten our papers back, and we filed them, a little over a week ago. And we will also let them know we'll send them back and indict the individual that sent them back to us. We'll send them back. This is the court of the people, and the people need to be reading the case and getting involved and understand what's going on. But it's a matter of pressure. We're looking for that, that critical mass. And this is the perfect time because they're shaking their boots right now with what Trump is doing, taking down the deep state. You know, I saw a video today, which I think was a little old, maybe a couple of weeks old, where the president said, talking about the deep state and what they're doing, trying to, destroy his election, both prior to it and during it and after it. They're trying to take this president out. It's a coup. He said it is treason. And we all agree, of course, that it is treason. And with what we're doing at the same time of what he's doing and the military and all of the good people in Washington that are trying to win our country back, I think they're going to break eventually. But we will continue to indict. We're going to be doing a habeas corpus. We're going to probably get back to habeas corpuses. Matter of fact, I know we are. We're going to start doing habeas corpuses again. We're going to file a new habeas corpus. Now, remember, we send the habeas corpus to the chief judge in a federal district court. So wherever the county is, whatever federal district court that they're underneath, that's the court we send it to. That chief judge has got our papers. And what was he if he hasn't read them? But he got our papers, or she got our papers. We're going to send a habeas corpus to that judge. And he's also in our papers. If you look at the papers, you'll see we have a list of all the indictments that we have done. We have indicted quite a few people. We've indicted a lot of federal judges, a lot of judges on the state and mostly town level. And we've indicted a lot of people with Lavoie Finnegan case out there in Nevada. And particularly he's from Nevada, I think, but particularly up in Oregon. And so they're going to see their name added to that list, and we're going to move on. Okay, we will indict anybody and everyone. We will clear in the papers everyone and anyone that gets in our way. So it's a matter of building up the pressure, getting critical mass, and pushing it forward. They have shut down our courts of law. Again, I got some papers today, some information, and I haven't been able to read these papers yet. And I think I've heard of things like this, and it refers back to the rules of the court, which in 1939 was a point in time when they did put the rules of the court in. But I'm going to read through the papers from two different law schools that were written on that. And we're going to write a paper on that and file it in the court. But that's what they've done is they've stole our common law courts. Now I'm going to see, how specific they are, and under what authority they thought they acted to begin with, and what words and where these statutes or this particular acts are that seem to have destroyed our courts of law. Just think about what they have done. They have imprisoned the people in a statutory prison across this country. Don't do this and don't do that. Code enforcement offices everywhere across this nation, in our towns, our villages, our counties, our states, across the United States. They have imprisoned us. They've imprisoned us as a slave to a slave tax through the IRS, the 16th Amendment. They have taken away the power and the authority and anything that the state has to say, took it away from them. They have no vote in Congress, in the Senate, okay, by the 17th Amendment. Under the 14th Amendment, which is something I missed out on the paper, I should have been a little more clear on the 14th Amendment, but we are not subject to their jurisdiction. When they wrote the 14th Amendment and said that the people are subject to the jurisdiction, to the federal jurisdiction, they were putting us under their statutory processes. And they were saying that we are now a slave to the system, and we're under that system. And we are not. That is treason. In 1871, by the Organic Act, they have created a nation within a nation, within a city. Okay, I think that's how it goes. But they have created another state. Okay, I think that'd be proper word to say state within a state within a city, because the federal government is a state government, is a state, so to speak. But it's the United States together. But in any event, they have created this process, and upon that is built all of the evil that they've been doing. That is the foundation of their work, and we've already rendered it null and void. And anything built upon it is null and void. You know, they got the Patriot Act and many, many different things. We gave a list, I believe, in our paperwork. Definitely in our memorandums, we were very specific on this, and we got into great detail of a lot of these things that were said in this paper. This paper was 50 pages, plus, of course, the index and cover sheets and different things of that nature. But we also had about 20 or 24 memorandums, okay? And all those are 10 pages, 20 pages long, okay? So we have a lot of information and details, and being very specific on these things. So they have robbed the states of their sovereignty. They are these states are no longer sovereign. When the 17th Amendment came through, it took away, it upset the entire balance of power in our Constitution. It destroyed the sovereignty of the states. They have no say on whatsoever, whatever the federal government, they have no recourse. What can they do? They don't control the senators, you know? Senators is really in the states supposed to be where the governor would maybe put a couple of people up to take the position, but it's the legislators of the state that make the decision on who their senator would be. They vote that senator in, and they have the power and the authority to remove that senator and replace them at any time. Well, that power and authority was taken away from them, so the will of the state is not part of the power structure anymore. The will of the people, we don't have any power or authority. Again, they've imprisoned us in statutory prisons. They've imprisoned us with a tax on our income and our whole everything we own. They take away even our property. Even when we die, they want a big percentage, or they'll take away property. Or as we're dying, they'll try to take it away in some of these courts that they've got going. And so we the people have no power or authority. We don't consent to government, because how do we consent to government? We consent to government through the judicial process, as we've been speaking about tonight, and through the political committee man process. Those are the two points of power that we the people must have. We have lost that. We do not control the committee man process. We do not decide who is going to be put on the ballot for voting by the people. We have no power or authority to prevent these people from stacking juries, grand juries, trial juries, or from injuring them in any way. What's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of the word. But in any way, you know, to take control of a grand jury, the will of the jury. We see judges who will step up and render a decision of the jury, a trial jury, overthrow it. We've seen prosecutors who think that they can take a grand jury indictment and start changing things in it, removing things, or putting more things in, or just throwing it out altogether. This is not what we are as a people. This is against the law. So the people have no power to control the political process except for going out and vote. That whole system is really also, been taken over. They've got all of these processes where they add all these votes, and that is the big reason, I think, that why they're taking in all of these, illegal aliens, because they want them to go and vote the names of people who died or whatever. But in any event, so we don't control anything. We don't control our courts. We don't control our political process. And they tell us, well, you get consent of government by go take your vote. And that's it. So the people are no longer sovereign. We've lost all of our rights. They've pretty much so. I mean, you know, even the ones we think we have, wait till you get to court to try to defend those rights. You're going to find out you don't have. We already found out. So the people have no more rights. They do not abide by the law of the land. Matter of fact, they carved out the law of the land and made their own equity for the law of the land. So, again, this is how bad it is. People, I don't think people realize how bad it really is. People know it's bad, but it's even worse than you think. Get involved in the courts and you'll see what's going on. So that's where we got to go. We got to take this all back. You know, I kind of got so lost in that. What was the actual question? I think I answered it, I hope.
It was, how do you get an indictment enforced?
And I already answered. Yes, it's a matter of the people stepping up, doing what's got to be done, getting the word out. Look at everybody, everybody, all of our members should go up onto our line, download a copy of this extraordinary action and order and decision. Like I said, it's about 58 pages altogether, and mail it to someone in your government. You don't need to do that to the governors, because we already served them. You don't need to do that in the federal courts. We've already done that. But maybe have them served on the state court, on both or your legislators in your state. Send a copy to each house. Send a copy to your sheriff, and send it to the news media. And again, we'll be releasing a press release, and we'll be putting out a lot of to a lot of the outlets across the nation, a lot of news outlets. When we do that, hopefully during this week, we'll do that. And we'll post a press release that people can take and attach, put it on top of the paper, and send it out. But get the word out. Liberty groups, take your message to Liberty groups. Tell them about National Liberty Alliance. Get them here. Get them involved. Let them participate and get educated. You know, without the education, you can't have anything. If you don't know the Constitution, how can you know if they know the Constitution? How can you know when they're breaking the law? You know, all these things they're doing, every time I listen to the news now, because I've educated myself to a certain point, and I listen to the news, I know the violations immediately. I know the answers to things that they don't know anything about. You know, they think that they can do things that they cannot do. They call us a democracy. No, we're a republic. Okay? So the states have lost their sovereignty. The people have lost their sovereignty. The federal government is in total control. They have been controlled by each state, who's controlled by the powers that be, the New World Order. And now it's time to step up, because what Trump is doing, we need to get behind him through this process and bring back law and order to the United States of America. Next question.
Can you help with judicial foreclosures? I filed a motion to vacate a judicial foreclosure here in Florida. The judge set the hearing and the bank's attorney did not show up, and no notice was given to the court. So
any
the judge
case, it doesn't matter. We don't need the whole thing. Here's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. Any case where the government's coming out after you and you are a defendant, I can't think of any case that we wouldn't take to join. Any case. You got an IRS case, we'll join it. You got a case in family court, we will join it. You got a non-judicial foreclosure case, we will join it. And here's what I forgot. I didn't get to this last point. Once we do our amicus curiae, which is a friend of the court, in this case on the defendant's side, and to turn things around and make them the plaintiff at some point, but we bring them into the court, okay? If they don't do the right thing, we bring them into the court through a joinder. And then they have X amount of days, 30 days, to answer the show cause, and then we will make a decision. But we will add, on top of returning the people to their original state before these things all started, to restore them, number one, and to cease and desist the court, number two. We're going to expect those two things, but we're going to go a step further. And again, we got to figure out a formula for this, and I'll work on that. But there's going to be also a monetary situation here for injuries, okay? And it'll be in silver. Gold, if they want to give gold, but it'll be in silver. Okay, now, and again, anybody that has a case and they want to talk a little bit about it, we don't want to know the details. We don't have time to get into details. And this is the most important thing. When you move into federal court, It's called Moving to Federal Court for Cause. A lot of people have tried to move their cases to federal court, and they get dismissed. They get, they don't get in. Even lawyers, I've seen lots of lawyers trying to move cases into federal courts. And what they're doing is they're trying to bring the case into the federal court for them to hear it and decide it. The federal court doesn't have the power or the authority to hear those cases. The only case that the federal courts can hear on behalf of the people is a constitutional violation. That's it. So if your due process was violated, we could move it to federal court for cause. If you're in jurisdictions unknown, you're not in a natural law court, and you're trying to get justice in a court of law, we can move it into federal court for cause. Those are the two things we move them into federal court for cause for. And once that is established, that they have violated your right of due process, violated the proper jurisdiction that you should be in by taking you and moving you to jurisdictions unknown in these equity courts, and they don't even follow whatever codes and statutes they have anyway. They make it up as they go, and they get away with it. Well, that's where we beat them, because the bottom line is when they violated your rights, that court must cease and desist. You shut it down. They must restore the person and pay some kind of a monetary situation for the injury. And that's what we're doing here. This is where our focus is. You know, you're never going to hear or argue the case that they brought against you. Okay? And if they really think that they can beat you in a court of law, then let them take you to a court of law. But I can tell you, I don't know if any of these cases that they can, any of the cases I've seen, non-judicial foreclosures, they cannot win in a court of law. A lot of these credit card things, they cannot win in a court of law, okay? Family court, adult court, what do they call it? The CPS and APS, Adult Protective Services, APS, okay? They don't have the power or the authority to hear these cases. And if they try to take them in a court of law, it will not be accepted. They have to get an indictment to begin with. Anything that's criminal, or they're trying to remove something from you, well, they got to claim some kind of a crime or something, and then they got to bring it into before the jury, a grand jury, an untainted grand jury. Untainted, one who knows and understands their powers and authorities. And we can orientate anyone, and this is all part of our course, even the orientation of the grand jury, an administrator's handbook, a jury administrator's handbook. In other words, the four individuals in every county that get to become the investigative body for the grand jury. It's a paid position. They get to become the investigative body. They get to solve a lot of problems. Right? There's the four sent out before the 25, just like we read just a little while ago concerning the Magna Carta. And so if the four can't repair the problem, they bring it to the 25. And if the 25 can't repair the problem, then they indict. And then the 12 people, 12 jurors, they get to decide. And look at, I've been looking a lot into the eight principles. There's eight principles Thomas Jefferson had discovered. They're called eight ancient principles. They're biblical, okay? And they are all self-evident. Truth is self-evident. No matter what you do, no matter what the case, if you got 12 people listening into a court case, okay, the darkness is revealed by the light of the truth, okay? It will unfold itself. It'll reveal itself to the jurors. It's very rare, I think, where the jurors can't figure out one way or the other, and they're split, and they decide, well, okay, since we can't figure out one way or the other, you know, we've got to let them go, okay? But generally speaking, a jury that's untainted, looking for the truth, and coming in with an oath and a vow to God to operate in a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and get the 6 to 8 hours of education of the things that they need to know to act as a proper good jurist, okay, they will be able to make good decisions. I trust that. I trust bringing any case that I've ever been in court for before a jury, and I feel I would win them all. Because I wouldn't take anyone to court for anything unless I felt I could win. And any government agency that came after me, they came after me unlawfully. I can win those too. They want to take it into a court of law? Let's go. And so anyway, truth is self-evident. All right, what's next?
That's all that I have, John. I
Any
don't see no more other than the fact that I guess I would like to recognize some people volunteered to do as many as 10. I had several did 20, and one did 25 mailings each, and I thank them kindly for their generosity. And that's the last of the announcements for me for tonight. I was looking for Brent. I don't see him here.
All right, well, we're going to go right into the calls then in a moment.
Yep.
If anybody has any questions or comments, star 6 to get into the queue, and we'll start taking questions. And again, let's see. Also, you know, we're looking for more volunteers. You know, we have a welcoming committee. We need more people, okay? We need more people that will send out papers for us, okay? And, you know, once you're participating with us and you become a member of National Liberty Alliance, you know, this jury, this grand jury will continue to stay in power and authority until we've completed really dealing with subversion against this nation by enemies foreign and domestic. And then, of course, we have to then shut down things once we can accomplish that goal and bring law back into our courts and law back into our government where these people will obey the Constitution. But once we accomplish that goal, then we will have to cease and desist. And all cases other than that ultimately needs to go to the grassroots in the counties, to the grand juries within counties. And again, let me repeat this. We need 4 people for every county to become administrators, a paid professional position, okay? A rewarding position because of the job that you get to do and the good works you get to deal with and to, you know, stand up for the people that are being abused by our government, and also the opportunity to have a good education and train the juries and the grand juries and the trial juries to be able to take their position for whatever time that has to be. So it's a very rewarding job. We need about 15,000 people across the nation. Presently, we have about, let me see if I have a website open. Let me open up the website. I think it's, well, it's over 1,000. I know that administrators, people have signed up for administrators. So we need as many as possible. Let's see. We have 1,087 people who have signed up to be a grand jury administrator. And the prerequisite for that is to take both of our courses. Anybody who's not taken our courses will not get that position. So you need to be taking those courses now. If we start filling those positions and start taking control and people haven't finished those courses, as long as they're pursuing and moving through those courses, you know, then of course they will be able to hold those positions. If a person wants to work in a county next door because it's closer to them, that's fine. You don't have to live in the county that you're working in. If an individual wants to get into their county and there's no more openings, they can go to the county next door. And they can always put in for a transfer at some point when one of those individuals might leave or whatever. But we do have, we're also writing a handbook for all of this so people can, you know, understand their job, their jurisdiction, their position, and how things work. And, of course, National Liberty Alliance will always be here as a counsel for any questions or concerns or something new, how do we do this. And if we don't know the answer, we definitely will research it and find that answer. But we will operate according to, you know, natural law and history. You know, our heritage, and again, with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And starting probably maybe October, but over the winter, we're going to be talking a lot about committeemen and training and teaching people to become committeemen. Some states, I think, actually run their early elections in January or the early part of the year. And I know New York, we do it in June, so it's more like spring, summer. But every state, you know, a lot of states do it at different times. So we're going to try to educate people how to become an elected committeeman. It's a very simple process, okay? And we'll have a committeeman book, they'll help train them into what to do and look for. But ultimately, once they get their training, it's a grassroots movement. It's got to be done by the people. The people have to decide on the grassroots level within their counties the things that they need to decide for anything that affects them. And so those grand juries and those trial juries is decided within those counties, of course, but the administrators, they really have to do a job. And a lot of it, again, is really just, common sense. But we will write a book a handbook in order to assist everybody. But again, National Liberty Alliance will continue to be here in order to educate for more people to become either administrators or committeemen and to become an elected committeeman. Once we establish that plan, I'm not going to get too much into it, but, it's an uphill battle. This is what caused us to move into the courts. And finding that the courts were all corrupt, it caused us to move in to deal with the corrupt courts. So when we realized we could do this through the grand jury. But once we take back our courts, and if there's any resistance against anyone who is a properly elected committeeman, then the federal court can get involved and force with that state court to obey the law and enforce the law that elected committeemen take control. And when you take control, we only need 5 people in every state, preferably 4 to 5 people in every county, so we'll fill as many counties as we can, but we will train all the existing committeemen that have been abused and that are in the system and would like to see justice and learn the right way these things should go. So we'll start that, like I said, probably in around October, so that people will be ready for the primaries in their state, whether it be in January, February, or June, whatever. Okay. All right, let me move over to the first caller. Again, a *6 and a 1, I believe, to get into the queue. We'll take our first caller. It is William from New York. Go right ahead, William.
A couple of comments. One is that if we have documentation that we are sovereigns, that wipes out the idea we're under jurisdiction. The other is that the JAG Corps would love to know what we're doing because they are looking to back up people who are going to stand against this fictitious government. The other
now,
thing
who
is...
Who is it you're saying, JAG Corps?
JAG Corps, yes. The Military Law Corps.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of that a couple of years back, but is there any way, if you want to make a connection between us and them and have a dialogue and see if we can work together?
I am planning to do that. It's just that I've been busy on my end, and I've got to take the time to do it. But on the radio. The other thing is that there's what's called the American Civilian Peace Flag. It is a 1:1.9 proportion. The field is white. The stars are blue. And instead of having horizontal stripes, you have vertical bars, and they are 13 of them. I am in the process of trying to get a flag like that made. I've seen it in the military proportion.
Again, we want to be careful, and to some degree, there are certain things we want to maintain status quo. Remember, Congress has written law concerning the flag,
Title IV.
For instance, it's Title IV. It was flag and seal, seat of government, and the states. What we need to do is really read through that and discover what is the proper way for the flag to be. I don't think it's anything different than what we already have. I know people maybe are trying to make a difference and putting up a symbol that represents the states, of course, and kind of turn things around in a different fashion. But we must follow the law of the land, and the law of the land is Title IV concerning flag, seal, seat of government, and the states. So I'll review through that if you want us to have contact and have a dialogue with those people, I will definitely educate myself a little more in Title IV before I have that dialogue. But we will follow what the law of the land is, and if they need to correct themselves, then they need to correct themselves. If we need to correct ourselves, then we need to correct ourselves. One other thing before you take back the mic. You had mentioned a declaration, and I'm very familiar with that. We got to be very careful how we do that to begin with. It could cause more problems than good. We don't need to make a declaration ultimately because we are already sovereign. And we go into a court, we should be able to get a court of law and be treated as a sovereign. So that's an automatic. And this declaration that we just did, it really covers for the people what our unalienable rights and really is. So, but again,
the flag deal, from what I understand, is they are looking at themselves as a port of entry, and we're under contract law. And when you bring in your own flag, now you're doing business under your flag and not their flag. So you get
that is a very dangerous situation. Again, we want to be very careful who we connect ourselves with, and they have to be compatible to us. We're going to follow the law. And remember, titles 1 through 57, with the exception of 26, you know, USC 26,
right,
which is for the IRS, with the exception of that, all these titles are lawful. All these statutes, codes, and regulations are lawful. They're done appropriately. Now, there may be a few exceptions in a few places that I haven't reviewed, and clearly, you know, if something comes up that, you know, some of these codes are 1,000-plus pages long. I mean, I don't have the time, nor do I have the desire to really study all that. But anyone who is in that, and when codes are brought up before people in a court, and let's say they're trying to go after someone criminally under USC 18, which would be the sea, or you know, would be law of the sea, really, the admiralty and the maritime and territorial. And so that, let's say someone in some government agency, whatever agency, you can pick one, it doesn't matter. Let's say they break some kind of a rule or a law. Regulations are one thing. Codes and statutes, that's law. If it's called positive law, that's another thing. And if they break a statute, which is unlawful for them to break, it doesn't, not for us, but for them, because they've been given certain powers and authorities and jurisdictions, okay, they now have to answer to these titles, these positive laws within our government. Now, when a jury hears the case, and maybe they'll find them guilty, let's say, of something, and maybe the code or the code or the statute might say, well, it requires 20 years in jail or something like that. Okay, well, the trial jury has the power of nullification, and they can decide, no, that's way too much, and they can do whatever they think they need to do because they're the ones hearing that case. We, the people, and let me tell you something. Another thing. Jail is not the answer to crime or criminals. That's not the answer. Maybe to someone that is violent, maybe we have to do something like that. But jail is not the answer. Restitution is the answer. The punishment is the restoring of the individual they violated. And the repairing of the individual they're violating through that process is also repairing the person who did the injury, okay? The defendant, because under common law, they need to participate in a restoration process for these people. And the jury needs to decide not only the facts and the law, if it's under a title, but they also get to decide what the restitution is, how to restore the person, and in that case being the punishment, whatever it is they think they need to do. And a lot of people who maybe certain people need to be, you know, kind of held down because they're going to run or something. Well, let's say they do run, you recapture them, you bring them back. They don't necessarily still have to go to jail. You know, we can put them under house arrest. We have the technology to put a ring on them and monitor them and their movements. So jail is not the answer, okay? But again, you know, in some cases it is. But go ahead.
I was looking at the idea that we have to take their legs out from under them, and these were means to do so.
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of people are doing a lot of things, but they really haven't researched the common law. They haven't researched the history of our nation. They haven't researched, you know, these ancient principles. They haven't looked very closely to harmonize the Declaration of Independence with the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and a lot of different things. And that they haven't, if they've done their homework there, then they will discover that there is a lawful process to deal with any of these things. But a lot of people get a lot of bad information. I know I did. I did a declaration in my county. I went through the whole process. I didn't go get rid of my license because my position is, you know, I have driven commercially in the past. Maybe I want to drive commercially tomorrow. And it is a good form of identification, so I'll keep my license.
Right.
But I don't need it to drive my vehicle, my private personal car when I'm not operating commercially. We don't need to get into the contract part and the commercial part or any of those things. We need none of that. We need just one thing, the law. That's what we need. Mm-hmm. And that's what National Liberty Alliance is teaching. But we can't go outside the structure that we have constructed through the Constitution and all of these titles that have proper authorities and jurisdictions. Remember, each title must say the jurisdiction, and it also must tell whether it is positive law or not. If it's not positive law, then it's usually regulations. And so, you know, if you break a regulation, let's say you work for the post office and you break the some regulation and stuff, and then you're brought up on these charges for breaking those regulations, you go to administrative court, and you might be, you know, you might suffer not working for a month or something, or some penalty that they can apply upon you, but they certainly can't apply a fine, nor can they incarcerate, because they can fire you, okay? So they can fire the person, or they can, you know, do something, take a month or two off without pay, and maybe you won't do it again next time. So half of the codes, this is almost literally half of the codes are positive law, and half of the codes are regulations. They're administrative with no power or authority of law where a fine or an incarceration could take place. But no fine or incarceration can take place in any court in the United States without a jury trial. The only exception to that is maritime and admiralty. That's the only exception.
Right, and that's what they want to put us under. And that's a shame.
Well, they've worked hard to apply those things to us, and we're telling them that's all a fraud. It has nothing to do with us, and we're going to get rid of you if you continue to abuse the people. You know,
yep.
We're really coming with an olive branch, and we're offering them the opportunity to stop breaking the law and start obeying the law and work with the people, and we're good with that. If they don't want to do that, then we got to get rid of them. Now, that doesn't mean that a judge, for instance, who has destroyed lots of lives, you know, we may overlook certain things because we're not going to look into those cases or anything particularly. But if one of the people whose lives they've destroyed files a complaint, a criminal complaint against that judge, they're going to have to pay the consequences. So that's what takes in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. So the injured parties must rise up. But they can't do that yet. But we do intend on getting to a place to do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me go to the next caller. You want a final word?
Nope, I am good. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, William. Appreciate it.
Yes.
Okay, let's take our next caller. Let's see. Oops, hit the wrong button. Sorry. Anybody's got a question or a comment, star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. I accidentally hit the wrong button. Star 6, we have no one in the queue right now. So star 6 and a 1, get into the queue, and I apologize. Okay, we're going to take our next question. Jeff, go right ahead. Jeff, how you doing? You got the mic.
Great, great, Jeff.
Up in New York.
Great, John. How are you?
Albany. Good,
yes,
good.
Albany. That's good. Hey, well, first of all, real quick things, but unrelated. You know, we have an opportunity here to expound upon this craziness that's going on in New York State with the 1-year window for sex abuse. The point is that the legislature can
1-year window for sex abuse? Is that a statute they're trying to make?
No, it's law. They
No, it's not law. You know, look at common law. There's no statutes of limitations in common law. Your case, you could have a case 50 years old, if that case can't be proven because the witnesses are dead and different things and you don't have the evidence, then it is what it is. But if you can pull together the witnesses and they seem to be, you know, valid witnesses, believable, and you can pull the evidence together, you can try a case that's 70 years old. It doesn't matter. You know, 50 years old. 20, there is no statute of limitation in common law. So those are null and void. They don't apply to us, and that's the point. No legislative law applies to the people.
Okay, so we don't want to address that then because we're just contradicting ourselves. Okay, so thank you for that point.
Yeah, we're taking that down, period. You know, we're taking it down.
Okay, all right. So my only other quick question is I had offered to do mailings for this 59-page thing, which the copies were sending out. As I indicated to Jan, I was going to be on vacation. I told him that after this, I think it was the first extension of time. Anyway, so I wasn't able to do it yet. I started printing them, but is it too late? I mean, can I still do?
Oh no, not at all. No, never too late.
Okay, good. Well, so what I committed to will be done tomorrow. I just wasn't sure. I didn't want to. If somebody else did it, I just didn't want to do it again. So, okay, cool. So if Jan's on the phone, on the line, I will be doing mine tomorrow and sending him copies of the proof of mailing. So.
Okay, Jan, you haven't put those to someone else, have you? Maybe you wasn't aware of it, but he's good to go to send them out, Jan? You're muted, Jan. If you're talking, you're muted.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I didn't send them to anybody else. They're his to mail.
Yeah, right, cool. Take care, Jeff. We'd appreciate it.
I promise I will. Awesome. Okay. I started printing them already. I just didn't know. I want to make sure, that's all. So that's all I got. Thanks, folks. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I tried to make it real easy. It's all in one PDF, and you just press the button, and as it prints, as long as it correlates, just do one at a time so it does definitely correlate. But, just print it out the way it is, put a staple up on the top or some kind of they got those, what do you call it, staples, a big staple, not a staple, but I mean clip. They have these clips,
you
put that in there.
I have a commercial stapler, so I'll staple
them. Yeah, I do too, so I can do them, but, 50-some-odd pages is hard to do with a regular stapler. But the other thing you could do is stop at any Staples or, any other kind of a stationery store, and they'll staple them for you. What are they going to charge you, if anything, So just a staple.
I'm sure you can find something to staple them, absolutely. But if you live near me, I'll staple them for you too.
Okay, there you go.
All right, guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate all you do, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
All right, you too.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Okay, all right, next caller, Cody from Illinois. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Cody.
Hey, thanks, Sam. Nice talk with you all. I was reading the Magna Carta, and they said that you should not trust government employees. I thought that was interesting. Or maybe it was a little dissertation on
we
the Magna Carta, but that's...
We can never trust anyone in government. We must always check it out. And you know what? In the court case of United States versus Williams, which really gave us really a lot of knowledge on, and if anybody hasn't read that case, it's up on our page. Go read that case. It's extremely powerful. But in that case, he makes the point clear concerning the power of the grand jury, which also extends to the administration, the administrators for the grand jury, to be able to walk into any government office. They should give them a phone call first, set them up, let them know we're coming in to do an investigation. Oh, what are you investigating? Well, we can't talk about that. Who are you investigating? We can't talk about that either. They may not be investigating anyone. And, Justice Anton Scalia in this case, who wrote for the majority in this case, the paper, he makes it clear the grand jury can investigate anything just because they want to make sure everything is okay. That's the power of the people. People need to understand this is true consent of government. And once we get this system set up, no one should ever deny service to the juries, whether it's grand jury or trial jury. We're going to straighten things up. First of all, the amount of money, all the money they've been wasting, we'll save them so much. We'll save the people lots of money. But on the same end, the people who are going to sit on a jury or a grand jury, they should be compensated a lot more than what they do compensate them. It needs to be real. That's number one. Okay. Number two.
At least minimum wage. At least minimum wage, you know, it's ridiculous.
But anyway, also at the same end of things, okay, people should be coming in and serving on these processes. But sometimes you'll get a case where, you know, let's take the grand jury. They may keep them for months on end. And, you know, they do that sometimes. And people can't afford to be able to do something like that. And only the people who can afford to do something like that they get. And then they're usually more easy to control, you know, if they're not working or whatever the case may be. But we have to change all that. A grand jury shouldn't sit any longer than a month. And that month maybe requires maybe a day this week and 2 days the next week, you know, a couple of days here and there throughout the month. If it's that busy where a grand jury is sitting for 5 days, 8 hours a day, then they should only sit for a week, and you should have numerous grand juries coming in to be able to cover the caseload. You know, something like the boroughs down in New York City, where almost each of these boroughs have almost 1 million people apiece, you know, they're going to need more administrators, and they're going to need a lot of grand juries operating at the same time. You come to a place more rural or you know, any place outside of the cities, you know, you may only get a couple of cases in a whole week to hear. The big problem would be a trial that you know is going to be long. But you have to, you know, let the people know that it's going to be a long trial, and it could cover, you know, weeks or a month. Most cases, I think, are probably short, a couple of days, but weeks or a month. And if they can't do that, then they shouldn't be required to do it. You know, I know as when I was in business, when I was working and I was in construction, if I were to sit on a grand jury, or if they called me for a grand jury or a trial jury, and I would respond that I can't do anything in the summer. It's my business time. Call me back in the winter. So that's what people should do. But they should respond to the call of being a jurist. And let's you become the law, okay? Yep. You get to decide, and we get to judge ourselves. That's the key.
Let me ask you, I was looking at suing a guy in Tennessee, and they've got common law courts listed. So what, if we're indicting, you're making an indictment that they're not, that they're covering up the common law courts, does that not apply to some states that still
offer? Yeah, they call them common law courts. I'll bet you dollars to donuts they're not common law courts. I'll bet you they operate statutorily. I bet you they the judge overrules the jury. The judge gets to decide the law. I mean, it's possible there might be some. But I doubt it. And remember, you know, I've talked with lawyers and about common law, and lawyers really think that the common law is a collection of the decisions of trial courts, and whether they're state or federal, and of course, you know, decisions on the appellate level, and of course, the United States Supreme Court rulings. That's what they call common law. But nothing could be further from the truth. Remember, the decisions of the United States Supreme Court, you know, the decisions that we use is decisions of empowering, okay? As far as their decisions, you know, as far as they make a decision, Roe versus Wade, for instance, okay? They definitely stepped outside of their jurisdiction. How could man legalize murder? Now, people may not see that this is murder, and that's unfortunate that their education and the demoralization by the government is so severe that they don't realize it. But in any event, especially here in New York, they say you get to decide. If a baby is born, you know, the mother could decide to kill it in theory. I don't know if it's actual at this point, but this is where they're moving to. In theory, they can let the baby lay there and just die. There are abortions that are not successful in the death of the baby, and the baby comes out alive, and they're just left in a bucket to die. If that's not murder, I don't know what is. But they don't have the ability to change the law of God. That is a law issue. It is not an equity issue, and that is the key. These courts have decided law issues. We don't have to refer to any court concerning what is lawful and what is not, as far as, you know, being a crime or not, that's already written in our hearts. We already know when someone's been injured that that's a crime. You know, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, so on and so forth. So we already know what a crime is. We don't need the United States Supreme Court to tell us what it is. But we can particularly use their decisions on the interpretations of the words and phrases of our heritage and the power and the authority of the people and sovereignty and so on and so forth. When you read through our papers, we have lots and lots of sources. We tell everything we talk about in our papers, we have a source for. And that goes back in order to solidify and the truthfulness and the fact that it is already understood. You know, it really is an understanding and meaning of words and positions and phrases and things of that nature. But as far as relying on the United States Supreme Court the determination of whether something is murder or not, that's the people to decide. You know, okay. It's not for the United States Supreme Court to decide.
So one last thing, for marketing, why don't we just tell people to address each other as kings and queens, and maybe they get the idea of their sovereignty.
Well, you know, we there is language that we've used and others have used from the standpoint that we are kings, ultimately, of our own being, you know, of our own household, so to speak, you know. No one can lord over another person unless it's within your household as far as your children are concerned. And we're responsible for them until they reach the age where they become responsible for themselves. And this is something given to us by God. And that is the strongest case that could be made in any family court where they're trying to take children away from people. You know, they do that all day long.
I was just thinking from the standpoint of, you know, how people used to address each other, master, and, you know, and I think Brent was talking one day that, you know, that even years ago, even a kid, they would address as master. But I don't know, just trying to wake up societies, I was thinking, you know, if people start addressing, you know, hey, I'm a king because I'm a sovereign, a marketing edge to get people to think about that.
Well,
but other than that...
You get pulled into one of these traffic courts, you could make a position there and say, "Hey, I have sovereign immunity here. You can't rule against me." You know, this sovereign immunity. You know, when you get all these people that come from another country, maybe they're some kind of a political position from another country, and they come into our country, they have sovereign immunity. But that sovereign immunity only applies to the fact that they're in a government agency in their own state. But they cannot be tried in our state by any of the statutes of our nation or our states, okay? So they can't be held liable for that thing. The traffic tickets, you know, that's all statutes. If they break some rule or regulation in our country and that would be punishable by some other person who works for the government, they can't be held liable for that. They have what's called sovereign immunity. Well, that's exactly what we, the people, have. We have sovereign immunity from all legislative law, okay? Of course, that's not going to go over well to an uneducated judge who relies on a bar attorney working as prosecutor in that court. They're the ones that really are making all the decisions. They're the one telling the judge and training the judge on how to rule as a judge. I mean, go figure that out. But nevertheless... they don't have that power and they don't have authority to do all that. And in a those courts, the best thing to do is just challenge the jurisdiction, deny them the jurisdiction. And there is a process. We do teach it, and you can go download our forms and so on and so forth. But you really, you know, look at you really want to work through these things and be able to articulate yourself, because those courts do call you in to talk. Most of the other courts, it's really paper pushing. And can get done and accomplished by paper pushing, but depends on the court that's going on.
Have you guys worked with the 1215.org people? It seems like I've seen a link that went back.
Yeah,
to
we're very familiar. We've got some of this stuff up on our course.
There
are some differences that we disagree with. For instance, he says we're the king of the court. We are not the king of the court. We may be the king's bench. 12 kings but the king of kings is God himself. Okay, he's the king of kings. He's the king of the court, God. Unfortunately, a lot of my conversations with him reading his stuff and going through things, I don't think he recognizes God in this at all. That's something that we have to correct. You don't walk in a court and think that you're the king of the court.
Yeah.
And you're going to make some ruling or something and go on and so on. But you are the king of the court in the sense that we're kings in the jury, the king's bench, which is the jury. And that's why we're doing what we're doing, and that's why we structured everything around the way we're doing what we're doing, so that we truly come in with a true common law process. Everything we're doing has been done before. Nothing we're doing that hasn't been done before. The only difference is we're doing a lot of things at the same time that have been done before. That hasn't been done. And it is an extraordinary action that we're coming in on, and we're up against tyranny. We're up against tyrants. And we need to do what we got to do. So, anyway, I got to move to the next caller.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Okay, let's take our next caller. I'm going to be careful with that button there. It is 818 number. Can you give us your first name and your state? 818, mic is open.
Yes, Otto, California.
Otto from California. Go right ahead, Otto.
First of all, I want to thank you guys. It's just amazing what you're doing. I actually want to volunteer to do some mailings for you just to help out for the petition.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, my question is, I'm going through the through basically challenging the jurisdiction, and I sent the package as instructed on the website, you know, with the notice and the show cost. Anyway, I got a letter from the attorney, from the plaintiff attorney, and they basically saying that I have violated some code, and basically I looked it up, and it says I have to file a motion to leave in order to do that.
That what they're saying to you is they're saying you have to ask our permission to leave, and the answer is going to be no, you cannot leave. We're going to hold you under our jurisdiction. No, look, there is a process to this, and if you don't know the whole process and you can't articulate yourself well enough, then maybe you should join your case with ours, and we'll deal with it for you. But the process is you challenge the jurisdiction, you give them the 30 days, you ignore everything else they do, but don't ignore going into court. If they tell you you want to be in court, you go to court, and you could tell the judge, well, you know, I've already challenged jurisdiction here. You did get my paper. And he'll say to you or she'll say to you, oh, yeah, I got that, and I saw that, but I decided I have jurisdiction. And then, you know, the next step for that is, well, look at Judge, I think you're going to have to recuse yourself because you just violated everything. You just proven that you are prejudiced to this case. You already believe you got jurisdiction, so you didn't make a decision. And the law requires that once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. Now, in order to decide a case, you have to hear from both sides. So since the prosecutor didn't respond, Judge, and you want to rule on this case, and the prosecutor did not respond, and I'm filed or I have filed my paper I can't think of it. Anyway, it's a paper that you write, you know, just making the statement that they have
defaulted.
Affidavit of default. That's it.
Affidavit
yes,
of
that they have defaulted. Okay. So therefore, the only papers before this court right now is my papers. And since my paper is before the court and it's a sworn to statement and an affidavit unrebutted rules the court, you have no choice but to find from me if you want to make a decision in this case. And if you don't want to decide that way, then you have to recuse yourself and you need to send me into a court of record, which would probably be a county court. Okay, so send me into that court of record. Let them decide. Now, they probably still won't decide for you, but you might get surprised. Who knows? But then at that point, the next step is to move it to, and if they don't move it there, then you got to move it to federal court for cause. Now you can go after them for more damages and have them cease and desist and all that other stuff. But you have to stay on the constitutional violation, due process, and
okay.
Jurisdiction's unknown.
Got it. That answers my question. Thank you so much.
Okay. Okay, let's take our next caller. Let's see. It is Audrey from New York. You got the mic. Five-eight-five number, New York. You've been unmuted. Audrey from New York, you got the mic. One more time. 585 area code. It's a 298 number. All right, we'll take our next caller. Dan from the Carolinas.
How are
you doing, Dan?
Here I am.
Dad.
Hello, Mr. John.
Yes, how you doing, Dan?
I, again, want to just express that those callers in tonight, especially earlier back, of what was being given by you, as always, is just absolutely very appreciated. I have an individual that is in South Carolina, and we'll just call him Mr. Charlie. And this man has been an instructor, and his wife both. They're both retired. And the IRS, and we won't be lengthy of this because it is late, but I promised him that I'd sort of, you know, give a paraphrase here for a minute or two because we've got other people
Has he been brought into court by the IRS, or is he just
in the past, for 8 years, this man, his retirement that he worked hard for in college at $3,500 a month, the IRS took lock, stock, and barrel his $3,500. And that was at the moment that this man was in retirement. Then after that, at some point, which has stopped about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, presently at this moment, the IRS is taking $500 out of he and his wife combined of what they get for Social Security. They're debiting and taking right without the funds going to his bank. They're garnishing or taking out $500. And on top of that, Mr. Charlie and his wife, and I won't go any further and just we'll keep it Mr. Charlie in South Carolina, in closing, is presently having the government to be paid $1,000 in addition to what the IRS is taking away out of he and his wife collectively, total of $500 between the two of them. So it's $1,500. Then it's back in time damages at the team.
Who's taking the $1,000?
The federal government. He's paying these monies to the federal government.
Yeah, but the IRS is taking $500, and then
out of his Social Security. He's well over 70 as a senior citizen, and his wife too. And the truth of the matter is, I think he has been hornswoggled. It's the best way I know how to tell you that he felt like that he was being compelled to pay on a every month basis $1,000 in regard to present federal taxes. He's right here,
well,
right side of me.
Let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Did they bring him into court?
You want to answer this?
Or they're just taking his money, because they do just take people's money.
He's going to speak to you.
Let me tell you what happened. I was a school teacher, and naturally, all the time that I was teaching school, they were taking taxes out, federal taxes and everything. Well, I got in a networking company. And making pretty good money, and I had some people. Kind of convinced me, or talked to me, told me I could get around paying the taxes, on a sideline business. And then I had to pay a guy about $6,000 out in Arkansas, and every time I'd get a notice from the IRS, the I would send information to him, and he'd send back some papers dealing with former, you know, court cases, and saying it didn't have to pay it.
Yeah, look, so those things don't work. None of those things work. You're not going to beat those people.
Yeah, well, I found that out. I found that out.
Right. Okay, so let me just ask one or two questions, because we don't need to know all the details. What I do need to know is, number one, have they taken you to court and they got a court decision to take this money, or did they just do notice of lien and taken your money?
No, I didn't have to go to court.
Okay, we can help you because we haven't taken on a case like this, but since they've, you know, if you're in communications back and forth, letter writing, numerous things you have to do, you know, you have to answer everything they send you, and you have to know how to answer them. You have to be careful, and you don't want to get wordy, and you're really not talking to them because they're not even reading your letters, but you're building a case, and you're responding to everything they do, so you're not acquiescing. Because that's what they do. They try to get you for acquiescing. The other thing is they'll file a notice of lien. And if you don't know what to do there, the proper movements from that point, usually it's 7 days, and then they'll come and they'll start taking things from you. And they make the numbers up. They're really evil. This whole process is evil, and they make a lot of these numbers up. I'll give you, for instance, let's say they take a look at an account you have, which they don't have the power or the authority to do without a court order, but they break an entry, they go in anyway, and they claim some code that doesn't even apply to you. And then they go in and they look and they say, well, okay, hey, look, this guy had $100,000 go through this account in the past year. So they'll write a paper saying that you owe us $100,000. I mean, they're not even honest there either. But the whole thing is really a ploy that they're really catching you in a net, and they're saying, well, okay, they file the papers, you haven't responded back and forth, they gave you a notice of lien, you didn't do anything to prevent that because you didn't know how, of course, and then they start taking your money, and they say, well, look at, you know, just come into our court, says the spider to the fly, you know, come on in. So they'll get you to go, look at, we can work this out, come on down. We'll do an interview, or we'll go to the administrative judge, and you can hear your case and make your case concerning this. You see, they're trying to get you to acquiesce or to comply, one or the other. And as long as you never acquiesce and you don't comply, they really don't have much against you yet. The other thing is the knowledge of they need to have what's called a proof for the judgment, the proof of claim. Okay, which is an affidavit which they'll never fill out. And then also they need the fiduciary authority in order to go into your accounts and do different things. Again, they don't, and that's another affidavit. So those two affidavits need to be filed in the federal district court that you're in. And they never filed them. But they're saying when they give you a notice of a lien, okay, and then they may use the sheriff to do the collection, or they'll just call your bank and say, hey, send his money here, this is what we want, to give him paper and all that stuff. The bank has to wait 7 days and they start sending the money. If you go up against the bank and complain against them and file some papers against them, that'll prevent that from happening sometimes. Not most of the times it won't. You have to get it even before they even touch your money. There's a process. I don't want to go through it. But in any event, that's where you're stuck at. They're just taking your money. So the notice of lien is a fraud because there is no lien that they're given notice to the county of so that the sheriff or the bank would respond properly. That's all a game. And the clerks know it. Everybody knows it. And it's part of the scam, and nobody does anything about it.
You're in a situation
where they're taking money out of you and they don't have the paperwork. Get a hold of Intake, start a dialogue there. He'll collect some information. It's going to be a little different than what he normally collects. I'll talk to Jim about it maybe tomorrow. But get your information to Jim. Do not hit him with a lot of paperwork. He'll get some basic information from you. I'll give him a list of things that we need to look at. Or maybe you can give us a list of things you have, okay? If you have the papers of the lien, give us a copy of that. You can show what they've taken out of here or there.
I got letters where they dropped liens when I had liens.
Okay, so you get us that paperwork to Jim, And I'll go through it, and we should be able to move you into the this court case as a joinder.
Well,
okay?
Whatever. Anything will be appreciated.
Well, we'll do our best. We'll get it in there.
Thing that got me, I owed $80,000. They ended up taking $300,000.
Yeah, I know. They don't stop. They're thieves. They need to return all that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we'll take the cases. They have to restore you. And also, you've been damaged so severely, you need to get injury, too. And we'll work through that process as time goes on. Now, we have not taken on a case like this before. But this kind of case is definitely we would take it. People who are communicating and debating with the IRS, that's a different story. We don't want to get involved until they're really pulled into court, and then we will get involved. But in your case, because they're stealing money from you, I think we're happy to get involved with that case.
Okay.
Okay,
well, good, and so, I can go into a lot more details when we
have. Well, Dan will help you make the connection. Intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. Get a communication going with Jim. Get him your phone number and send him some documents of the liens and those kind of things. Even if it's too much, I'll go through it, and then I'll be able to make a plan for the next case that may come in like yours that we may be able to assist with. And then we'll have a plan on what information we need. But we definitely need the liens, okay, the notice of liens. We need to, if you got some of the letters, the last couple of letters you got before they took the lien on you, okay, if you can get that. And if you can show some documentation of what they've stolen off you so far, that's basically what we need.
All right, we'll see what we can do then. I appreciate that.
Okay. All right. Thanks for calling.
Real quickly, thanks, Pat. We certainly want to honor the others there that are taking over. I need to give a little message to Mr. Jan. I tried to meet him or by the phone a couple of days with Mr. Carl. And so if they're going to be in there tomorrow, I really would be good for a minute or two if Mr. Jan's going to be in.
Yeah, well, send Jan a letter with an email with your phone number, ask him to give you a call or something, or you can find his number up on line and call him.
Yeah, I got his email. He's talked to me, and he's a great guy every time I have to speak with him. I'll do maybe send an email in there that I'd like to speak with him. And I will tell you,
he's on tonight. He's probably listening, so he's hearing it. Send him an email. He'll respond to it.
I will tell you in closing, your documents happened to end up and went through my spam folder. This should be some help to all other people. So we'll get going on this, and I'll talk to Jan tomorrow as to expeditiously whoever you guys want me to mail to. I'm trying to give advance notice, and I'll talk to Jan tomorrow about this. So we need to veer now for other people's on this queue.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you too so much for these people. That's really, I've known this individual, he and his wife, I've known them probably 30 years at least, personally.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dan,
we've
got to move on. We've got more people here, and we're running out of time.
Thank you.
So thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Good night. Okay, our next caller does not have a name. It's a 470 number. Give us your first name and your state. You got the mic.
Scott Bailey.
Hello? Scott, from what town? What state?
Georgia.
From Georgia.
Scott Bailey from Georgia. I'm currently in a case, and I'm challenging this jurisdiction stuff, and
You're a defendant? What kind of case?
It spawned from a traffic case. You know, they said I swerved across the white line and I had a headlight out, so they pulled me over. And then it all started from there. You know, they wanted to go through the vehicle or private car, actually.
If you want us to challenge the jurisdiction for you, just get involved with a joinder.
Yeah.
Talk to him about it.
Yeah, I've talked to that brother about that, and he's helping me along with it. I just wanted to call in and kind of get my story, you know, a little.
Yeah, but we don't have the time to get into all the details.
Okay.
But remember, the key thing is this. This is the key thing to win all these cases, okay? And that is that they don't have the jurisdiction. You're in a jurisdiction totally unknown, and they don't have the power or the authority to bring you into those, so they need to let you go. That's number one. And they can never find a jurisdiction to pull your case in. That's number one. Number two is you're not getting due process. You're not in a court of law. You're in a court of equity. Administrative. They don't have the power or the authority for that either. That's where we win the cases, okay? We win the case on a jurisdictional challenge and the fact that you're not getting due process and they can't give it to you. They're not a court of law. So we don't need to know any more than that, and that's true with every case we do, okay? Every case. We don't need to know the details. Sometimes we need to know a little bit, but generally
I've challenged jurisdiction, but now it's come to the point to where they're threatening family members to try to figure out where I'm at.
Push the paperwork through, Jim. And anybody that's going through that process, remember one thing, most important thing. We will be as interested in your case as you are. If you start a process and then you don't get back to us for 30 days and then you come back and you start again, well, it's going to move slow, you know. And some people, they'll start something up and then they'll wait 30, 60 days. Next thing you know, they got an emergency. They want us to hop to it. Well, we don't drive around in red trucks, you know. We can't respond that quickly. We have a process that takes time and we'll apply it, okay. Wow. And if worse comes to worse and you feel that they're going to try to incarcerate you or do something stupid, then just say, okay, I'll pay the fine, but don't worry about it because you're paying it under duress, okay? And that's the key, under duress. You write a check to them or whatever and put under duress in the memo, okay? And don't worry about it. You're just trying to keep yourself out of jail. But this doesn't sound like anything. They'll try to get you maybe in contempt or something because they may get so angry and they'll do some real stupid things.
Well, I think there's nothing more dangerous than
ignorance in action, okay?
Yeah, I think that's what's happening. All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Appreciate it.
We'll take our next caller. Thank you. Okay. Clifford, you got the mic. What's your state? Clifford. Clifford from New York. You got the mic.
Can you hear me?
From New York. What state are you from, Clifford? Yeah, we can hear you.
Michigan.
Okay. Clifford from Michigan. Go right ahead.
I have a comment and a question.
Uh-huh.
One thing I've noticed, John, is that I've not heard not one thing stating that make sure that the courts don't try to use the injured party line, that they're the injured party.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can't be, obviously. Has to be a person.
Right. The Constitution actually, I'm not sure what part of it is. I gotta look it up. My roommate, Bud, told me that that the state cannot use the injured party
that's a principle under common law. And it goes like, in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. Okay.
Correct.
And there's another one.
We're the ones that are injured.
Right. But bear in mind, the Constitution doesn't get into that. The Constitution refers to the law. And law always refers to natural law. Always, you go into Black's Law, they tell you it's law. Okay, there's what's called positive law or statutes or codes. Those are all one thing. That's equity. We're in courts of law. That has nothing to do with statutes. So that's the difference between the two. And so now we've got to go to the principles and the rules of common law. For every injury, there must be a remedy. In order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. Those are two major points in common law. But
right.
So anyway, but you should be taking our course to come to an understanding of what the Constitution does say and what common where common law comes from, and we cover a lot of stuff, how the courts work, the difference between equity and law, and so on and so forth. So you should take our course to understand that. It's a government by consent course, and also take our civics course
to
learn how we got where we're at.
John, I tell you, I wish I could, but I don't have any fundage. Unless you guys have a food bank or something, then I would donate every last bit of my food stamp money to you guys. You know,
well,
for
if
a food
you
bank.
If you can't look at our civics course is free. You just have to become a member
mm-hmm.
and you get in. It's free. That's free. Our government by consent course is $5 a month or more. And if you can't afford the $5, and there are some people that are on such a tight budget they can't, just get a hold of Jan, and he'll open the door for you so you can get in and take the course. Jan at NationalLibertyAlliance.org.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, I spoke to Jan, and my question to you is, I spoke to Jan about this, and I asked him if you guys could help, and it's concerning a shut-off notice to our cabin. They're going to be basically shutting off our power tomorrow.
Right.
I'm not exactly sure what time frame it is.
That's something we couldn't do anything for on that. I mean, that's something that you'd have to initiate against some corporation. It becomes a legal thing. You should be able to get help from public assistance, maybe. And,
We've actually tried going through MDHHS, and their comment, and I was there when they said it, that the only thing that they could do is give us a candle and a blanket.
Well, that's pretty evil. So. Is there anyone, is there anybody in the household that is disabled and they can't, you know, maybe you need heat or maybe you need air conditioning or you're is anybody in the household disabled?
Yes. It would be my roommate, Bud. Several months ago, he did have a stroke. He is able to get around with a walker and stuff like this. But as far as anything financial concerned,
he basically relies on me. Look, the best I can advise you on this is to call them up and follow this up by letter, get their fax number, send them a fax, send them a certified letter, get them on the phone. Do all three things and let them know that there's a disabled individual in this household and it's dangerous to shut the electric off. They will at least allow you so many amps or whatever they figure out, voltage or whatever it is. I think it's the amps. They'll allow so much electricity to flow at any one given time. And so at least you can keep some basic lights on. And if you go into the winter and you need electric for heat, they have to do something for that. So do those three things.
We rely on a wood stove.
Huh?
We use a wood stove.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, you know, let them know that there is a disabled individual in here, and if anything happens to them, you're responsible for them. They should be able to work out something. I've seen it as low as giving $10 a month plus paying the new bills, and they should be able to work that out. And by this letter, doing this, by the phone call, the letter, and the fax, certified letter, you get a fax, you get a receipt, the phone call, you got all three, you're getting them the fair warning that if anything happens to this disabled individual because of electric, that they're going to be held liable for you. For it, and then try to work out a deal. Tell them, look, I'm willing to give you, you know, a few dollars a month. I'm limited, but I'm willing to give you a few dollars a month, and pay, keep up on the current bills as they go, and then try to keep your bills down low as you can so you can do that. But with that, I got to move to the next person because we're running out of time, and we only got a few minutes and two other people. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. My roommate wanted to ask Jan a question real quick. But I got Jan's number. I'll talk to him tomorrow and stuff. But yeah, I just that was just basically my comment, my question, and Bud says thank you ever so much. And again, as I talked to you before the thing started, you are definitely overworked. You're not paid enough. And if nobody appreciates you, you got me in your you got me and Bud in your corner. And
I appreciate that. And, I do not get paid for what I do, but you know, your bills are paid sometimes, of course. You know, all of the certain bills that I have to pay, you know, phones and cable and all that stuff is paid by National Liberty Alliance. But I certainly do not receive a paycheck, you know. So
right,
okay.
Right. Well,
hopefully,
believe it or not,
you actually
should, John, and I mean anybody else in there. And, you know, I guess the last thing is, you know, send my regards to everyone and tell Brent we missed him.
Okay. I appreciate the call.
All right.
Thank you, Clifford. All right.
And thank you much, John, and you take care and have a good night.
Thank you. Okay, next call, Barbara from New York. We got three people left on the line. I want to try to get a couple of minutes with each of you, but we're hitting the midnight time. But, Barbara, you got it.
Hi. Yes, hi. This is very short. I just wanted to say that it was very cool. I noticed on the 17th Amendment that on your site you have the document that shows that it's not been ratified, that from the National
Correct.
Archives, microfilm publication from 1988. And yet, if you look online, there's so many articles that say that it is ratified. And
no, well, that's a lie. We have every state.
Lying about it.
Of course they are. Look, we documented this. We've done a memorandum on this, and we have all the proof in there. We have the responses from every state and the tally up from the Congress, and it was not ratified. Period. End of subject.
Yeah.
And if anybody reads through that memorandum, all that information. The 16th Amendment was never ratified. The 17th Amendment was never ratified. The 13th Amendment was put in place of the original 13th Amendment. And then the 14th Amendment, of course, they have to change the language on that because it's repugnant to the Constitution. It's repugnant to our unalienable rights, claiming us to be subject to their jurisdiction. We are not subject to their jurisdiction.
I think it's just so nervy. I must have come across 8 to 10 articles that said that it was ratified, and they're just lying outright. So,
that's what they do. Look, you could see what they're trying to do to Trump. All the fake news, all the fake reports. We've had exchanges with the bar and different people, different groups and stuff, and they go out and say all kinds of evil things against us. They put words in the mouth that we never put in there or anything.
Uh-huh.
You know, by God's mercy, ultimately, everything we talk about is recorded. You know, this
uh-huh.
phone, this conference call is recorded. We can prove and show everything we say and what we talk about. We believe in the government of the United States. The problem is we've got a lot of tyrants in there. They're breaking the law, making a lot of money. They need to be removed from office, and we're going to go after them. Either they change their ways and start doing the right thing and pray and hope that nobody tries to come up to get them for the damages they've done to them. But they need to cease and desist all this illegal activity and obey the law. And there's nothing we do or say that we cannot back up and prove. We have documentation for everything. That paper, we got one page on that paper that's got like three quarters of it is quotes and the sources and information, and a quarter or less of it is just the statement that's being made. So we've got lots of proof on what we do and say. Okay, I'm running out of time, so I got a couple other people. So, and
okay,
a final word?
That's it.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's take Terry from New Jersey. We only got a minute or two. Terry?
Okay. I was thinking about how you get your declaration into local courts. And I'm thinking this is what I would do if I got a ticket where I had to make a court appearance.
Well, we don't teach people to do declarations. We don't get involved in that with the man on the land stuff. We use the natural law to beat them up. It's a fraud what they're doing. We call it for what it is. We challenge their jurisdiction. We show them that they don't have it, and they don't have it. and we move it to federal court for cause if they're not going to do the right thing and shut the case down. And that's how we deal with it. If people are able to do that, there's enough information on our site. We've got a book, a 94-page book. It's an anatomy of a court case, and it lays out the process and how the court works, the paperwork, the motions, and all that stuff. Plus, we're teaching through our government by consent course, we're teaching things in law and the process and how the courts work and how they're structured. So if you get an education, we also have lots of forms. All you have to do is put your personal information in there. If you challenge jurisdiction, we have a form to challenge jurisdiction with. And not only jurisdiction, but the due process that you're not getting, you can go after them for that in federal court. You can move it to federal court. All that is there, but it requires knowledge and experience. And if you don't have it, you need studying it. And if you need help now, then you can join your case to our case, and we'll help work it for you. Okay?
Thanks. You almost made me forget my question, which was with regard to introducing this, what do you want to call it? Action, extraordinary action, affidavit?
The paper that we opened up an extraordinary action back 2 years ago, and we've been in the courts for over 2 years. The trial has been going on for 2 years. This paper now is making the declaration and also decision and order. And that's what this court paper is. We're at the end of the case. We just gave them notice of our order and our decision, and they're to obey it. And we're filing it everywhere, and we'll continue to pursue that and attach cases where people are being beat up in the courts. That's what we're doing. So we're looking for critical mass. We got over 7,000 people working with us right now in the sense of behind us in National Liberty Alliance, and we operate under the authority and the power of we the people through grand juries, because that's what we are. You know, National Liberty Alliance is really a facilitator for education, communications, and organization across the nation. And we've organized all the grand juries from every state, one grand jury from every single state representing all the counties within their state. And we've come together as one unified United States common law grand jury, which is how we filed it. And we filed it not only as the grand jury, we also filed it as the people, which is the jury itself. And so we get to make the decision also. And this is an extraordinary, action at law is what it's really called. But that last paper is the decision in order. It's the finale of the case, and we're bringing in cases to deal with it through joining. And we're going to make decisions on those two. Okay?
Well, just one other thing here. Now, if you get a ticket and you have to make a court appearance, would you not encourage people to attach that to their counterclaim or whatever you want to call it?
We really would prefer not doing many traffic, because we have people that have serious problems. But you know, we will do a traffic situation if someone really needs
this. No, I'm just saying that the people in the NLA should attach it, not necessarily because look, let's face it, the worst that can happen is they're going to have to pay the ticket. I'm not saying that everything has to get the NLA involved.
Right. We've given that information. If you go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, okay, and you click on due process, read through that very carefully, that page, and then at the bottom you'll access, things that you can do and information that we give. You have to be a premier member to get into that. That's giving us $5 a month or more. But once you enter into the page where it gives you information on the abuse of courts, we have forms there, and people can file their own papers. And you're right, in a traffic court, why not experiment yourself? The worst case scenario is you're going to have to pay the ticket. You could still take them into federal court. But we have a form there challenging jurisdiction. The next step after 30 days of challenging jurisdiction, you have to serve it on the court and also on the quote-unquote prosecutor, so they call them. And they try to hide that person. And if you can't find that person, then you send it to the county DA. Because then they will send it back and say, hey, this is his case here. But in any event, you file that paper, okay, and the next step after 30 days, you file an affidavit of default, and then if they abuse you after that, there's a process to move it into federal court if that's what you want to do. But, You know, and look at the more and more we get this word out, the more and more these judges see our papers, and the more and more this trickles down even to the village courts and the town courts and the city courts, then the more and more concerned and worried they're going to be, and the more and more success the people will have. But with that, I got to move on. I got one other caller, and it's after midnight, and we got to close down, okay?
Yep.
All right, thanks, Terry. Okay, last caller. It's a 720 area code. You got the mic.
Hello?
Yes. What's your first name and state?
Rebecca from Arizona.
Rebecca from Arizona. Go right ahead, Rebecca.
My husband was arrested today, and his due process rights were violated.
What was he arrested for?
Supposedly child support arrears.
Okay. All right. You can do, we can do a habeas corpus for you if you want.
Okay.
Or we can do, there's a couple of ways to go. What you want to do is get a hold of Jim, give him a synopsis, you know, you write down a very short synopsis, give him the details, okay? And once you do that, then we will, we'll discuss it, and I'll probably suggest to do a habeas corpus, but we may do something else. But if he's in jail, and
well, I was
and,
working on a habeas corpus right now, because
You're not going to be able to accomplish it. You're not going to be able to get a habeas corpus through.
No.
Okay, we have a good chance of getting a habeas corpus to deal to. We take it right to the federal court, and we go to the chief judge of the federal district, and that chief judge in that federal district has gotten, our papers. So that should shake them up a little bit. When they see that we have indicted federal judges and he doesn't want his name on that list, that could be some leverage for us, for him to do the right thing and obey the law and rule on this properly. Besides that, look at federal judges, they really don't want to get involved in cases like this. They push them away. And when they do get involved, they're not going to take the big risk of not doing the right thing. Now, they think they've been able to get away with, ignoring habeas corpuses. Because they have this big dark secret that they think is going to protect them, but they've lost their protection. The deep state is on its way out. So, you know, the status quo that they've been maintaining, that protection for them is no longer there. We are going to indict them if they don't obey the law, and at some point in time, our indictments will go through. I'm confident of that. The question is how long and how many people are going to respond and work with us to do what has to be done by getting behind us, supporting us, and being there. You know, so
I have but, a question that I'm supposed to meet
let
with.
Let me ask you one other question. Did they set a? they arrested him for not paying child support. Now
he went to a hearing on another case, and they arrested him outside of the courtroom. No, it was a violation of his due process rights. And I worked on a emergency motion.
The point is, they don't have jurisdiction, and it'll be proven once the federal judge hears the case. I don't think we're going to get a federal judge that's going to decide to hear the case and then break the law there. If he's going to break the law, his safest way of doing that is ignoring this and moving on. But I think they're going to realize now that they can't really ignore this as often. So, but again, you know, do they give any anticipation on how long he's going to be in jail or when his next hearing is or anything?
I filed an emergency motion to quash the arrest warrant today, but I didn't get it faxed to the judge's chambers on time, so she didn't release it.
All right, do that. Whatever you can do, get in touch with Jim and start preparing for our assistance if you can't be successful. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. Okay, that we've come to the end of our evening. Thank you, Rebecca. And Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday, and everybody should get involved as much as they can. And, you know, if you can't physically and literally get involved, everyone should be able to give $5 a month or more, support what we're doing, and educate yourself. Get educated. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.